now. Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, good evening. I am Bob Kincaid, and this is All Dubai Port Radio All the Time. That's right, nothing but Dubai ports for three solid hours every night. See, I'm being a smart aleck again. I apologize. I am Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. It's Wednesday night. And, of course, being Wednesday night, well, you know what, you know what Wednesday night means around here, around these parts. It's a special experience that goes back to my days in the basement of the Baptist church with the little old blue-haired ladies.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah, because, of course, it is prayer meeting night at Head On. You know, while, Wednesday night prayer meetings were really enjoyable back when I was young. There was...
I rebuke it in the name of the Lord!
There was fellowship supper in the basement down there. Lots of good cooking, lots of good eating. And then, the Wednesday night youth group thing, and it's all, well, it's all gone for naught for the most part, I suppose, because that church that I once attended has been reduced to nothing more than a political, an auxiliary arm of Karl Rove's Religious Army of the Right. Jesus Christ himself would not be welcome in that church basement anymore. We're not going to get off on the wrong foot. We're not going to start with a bummer. Instead, tell you what. Let's start with some emails from folks who took time to stop and say howdy. And we do appreciate that. And I'm not talking we, like, you know, me and that mouse in my pocket. I mean Agnes and I. A friend by the name of Dermot writing from Germany. Hello, Bob Kincaid. Since I found RadioPower.org, it has become my default internet station, and I enjoy your enthusiasm and passion. I should mention that I live in Germany, and over here we have such a low opinion of the current U.S. administration, you just wouldn't believe it. Despite Germany's despicable history, today it is a haven of democracy and civility and consideration for others. Having spent some wonderful times gigging in the States and having met so many people and become good friends with very many Americans, I'm at a loss to understand how the American electorate at large could vote for an inarticulate, ill-informed, thuggish laggard as a president. Boy, there's a word I haven't heard in a while, and it's a dandy, too. A laggard. He is. George Bush is a laggard. That's gorgeous. The fact, Dermot writes, the fact that they did it for a second time beggars belief and is nothing short of being at best foolish and at worst completely stupid. While I don't agree with every one of your utterances and standpoints, I agree with a lot of what you have to say. That's the democratic way, don't you agree? Yes, I do. And if this was all about agreeing with Bob, this wouldn't be worth putting across the internet. Because I'm not in need of some sort of psychological affirmation. That's not the point. The point is to, I don't know. Can we find some answers? Can we at least look for them by having extended conversations? Is there a possibility that we might unmask one or uncover one? I hope so. I think so. And Dermot also wants to know what the listenership numbers are. I was talking with Ben Birch at White Rose Society earlier today. It looks like we are growing by leaps and bounds. We're into the several thousands now. And while that is a drop in the bucket of 280 million Americans, or a world with 6 billion or whatever, I like to think that little sparks make big fires. And you know what? I'll take a few thousand. You know, we're not, let's see. Yeah, we'll be 4 months old. We'll be 4 months old on our Friday show. So I would say that is sufficient growth. And at some point, I'm hoping, I think there comes a point where we're going to reach a level where it becomes exponential. I'm pretty sure of it. And Dermot says he'll write again. I hope you do, Dermot. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking time to share and to comment and listen and to ponder. It's the most important process that I think our nation can involve itself in right now. We don't the 10-second soundbite, and I wrote this in my response to Dermot. The 10-second soundbite has just about killed us. The 10-second soundbite and the 2-minute availability, it's not good for America. We need a discussion. And as I've said before, and as far as my approach to liberal talk is concerned, we're not like the Republicans. The Republican Party, they think that what America needs is a good talking to. Because they're authoritarian. They're like, really nasty paternal. And they just want to, tell us how it has to be. And there's no process in that. It's dictatorial in nature. You do what I say, not what I do. Right? That's pretty much how the gig works. And while we're talking about liberal talk radio, I want to share a little soundbite with you that I ran across at Crooks and Liars today. It's an excerpt. I know, you're going to want to shower when this is over. It's an excerpt from Hannity and Combs. And I just want you to listen to the process. Listen to the way they talk about you, okay? Take this personally. Take this personally. Listen to the way a filthy little monster like Sean Hannity Job talks about you. Listen to how he talks.
This is a party that is not only unhinged, led by their leaders Al Gore and Carter and Clinton.
You're crazy.
But the Hollywood...
Garofalo, the great intellectual light of the left.
But they are a party, frankly, that is an appeasement party.
Could that be
that
Anthrax
Bolter? That is pre-9/11 in their thought process, and they show themselves every day to be weak on national security.
They are pre-9/11. I mean, they do have affection for these terrorists.
Oh, please.
Well,
Did you hear the liberal? You might have missed it. You might have missed it if you weren't paying very, very close attention. Did you hear the liberal all through that Alan Combs? All through that filthy diatribe by Anthrax Coulter and Sean Hannity Job. All that liberals are insane. They have a pre-9/11 mindset. Just repeating the god-awful little megaphone garbage that gets sent out of Karl Rove's fax machine and email across the country every day. It's a pre-9/11 mindset. Bite me, Sean. Bite me. If I've got a pre-9/11 mindset, you've got a pre-Galilean mindset, for God's sakes. But what I want you to hear, what I wanted you to notice out of that whole soundbite, I wanted you to hear the response of a well-known American liberal. Honey, if you'll crank that, don't start it again. Just, it's still up there. Start it and move the cursor up to where we don't have to listen to all the filth again. No, down here, sweetie. Well, I tell you what. The point here is that, what you heard of liberalism in that exchange. What you heard of liberalism in that exchange was toward the very, very end, after all the filth, and after Ann Coulter, you got, please, please, try it again, yeah.
Pre-9/11, I mean, they do have affection for these terrorists.
Oh, please.
Well,
well, there's your liberalism. There's fair and balanced Fox, for starters. But, yeah, there's your liberalism. Please. Oh, please. Please. Kumbaya, my lord. Kumbaya. Kumbaya, my lord. Kumbaya. I know, no singing. But it makes me sick when I see exchanges like this. You know, poor little Alan Colmes just sitting there getting the deck wiped with his face. And the best he can muster is, oh, please. Oh, please. You know, who wants to be on Alan Colmes' side? Who wants to be on the side of someone who won't fight back? You think that dude's got your back in a blind alley at night? Hey, buddy, give me your wallet. Oh, please. Is that the best you've got? Give me your wallet. Oh, please. No, I mean it. Give me your wallet or I'm going to cut your freaking throat. Oh, my goodness. Let's talk. Don't wag that finger at me, Agnes. Oh, please.
Oh, goody.
Oh, goody. Now, seriously. This is liberalism? Or is he just a... Yes, he is. He's just a paid doormat. And the whole exchange, it was just a long slander fest. But it's what they're good at. And I get some suggestions every now and then. And, you know, I'm a nice guy. I'm a sweet guy. I'm a kind guy. Decent, you know, shirt off my back type. But, you know, if you get much under the skin, you don't have to go too deep to start running up against the redneck. And I am one, and I don't take kindly to this is what the Republican right does. They come up and they, you know, you ever been one of those situations where the dude gets up in your face and starts poking you in the chest and poke and poke and poke and poke? What do you do, Alan? You're poking me in the chest. Oh, please. You know, there was a snide comment before that about Janine Garofalo, the leading, you know, and Coulter calls her the leading liberal light of the left or whatever. But that's what they come up and they poke you in the chest and they poke and they poke. And we sit there, and, you know, if you would just stop poking me in the chest, we could have a dialogue. The dialogue we need to have is the dialogue I was talking about at the beginning of the program. That dialogue is amongst ourselves. And because there's no... The only thing you can do with a Sean Hannity is to get across the table and grab him by his scrawny throat and see how long it takes for him to turn purple. Oh, see, he's full of anger. He's just like Hillary. He's full of anger. No, I just refuse to be poked in the chest or dumped on the nose or flicked on the forehead. And the funny thing is, I learned this in fifth freaking grade. This isn't upper level doctoral level psychology. If you persistently let the little punk come up and, you know, flick you and thump you and punch you and kick you and hit you, and you let him get away with it, eventually he's going to become emboldened enough to do some real harm. Now, I don't believe in going out and starting fights. And in most instances, sometimes you can ignore them. And I think that's, you know, I don't know, maybe that's what that sad little Alan Combs was doing. Oh, please. But the thing is, from an ideological standpoint, I'm not talking about starting any brawls, but from an ideological standpoint, you've got to stand up to them and look them square in the eye and say, oh, I don't know, let's try some of the stuff they've tried on us. Why do you hate America so much? Why do you support a man who was asleep at the switch when our buildings came down? I know, he did it. Or whatever. Why do you support that man? Why do you support a man who has aided in the destruction of our healthcare system? Why do you support that man? Why do you hate America? The report out today, there are drugs out there that since the Medicare prescription drug plan took effect, they're just ordinary, everyday kind of prescriptions taken by America's senior population. Those drugs have gone up by 10% just since the drug plan kicked in. God, could that possibly be because the fox is inside the hen house now? Could it be? Is that a possibility? I don't know. Let's go to the phones. Luke is with us. Hey, Luke, you're head on.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, I'm about ready to throw up. I tell you, watching some of this media coverage of all this. The new apparently talking phrase on MSNBC is, this is a Republican revolt.
Oh, my God. You mean with the ports thing?
Yeah. It's a Republican revolt.
Oh, it's, well, and please understand, Luke, this is part of the con.
I know. Well, see, the thing of it is, the person who first brought this thing up, from what everything I've seen, was Russ Feingold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was the one watching the store.
But it's a Republican revolt, and I forget who it was that I saw writing this earlier today, and the line was that, if Rick Santorum comes out against it, the advertising slogan during the political campaign season, Luke, will be, Rick's, we need a strong, independent, fair-minded man like Rick Santorum in the Senate for Pennsylvania, because he stood up to George W. Bush.
That means he's going to step away?
yeah, but, I mean, you see what the con is.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the thing that gets me is, here it is. It's been dropped in the Democrats' lap. I mean, they couldn't have asked for something nicer than this. It's like, we can make George Bush look weak on defense,
mm-hmm.
on national security.
Right.
And I think somebody, maybe on your show last night, said, I'm waiting for the DLC to screw this up. I mean, I've got faith in them. I mean, they're going to put something out that says, you know,
yeah, I think
that opposes this is just moonbat, you know.
Right. That was about the time I think I said that the DLC could screw up a one-car funeral.
Oh.
Yeah.
I told Agnes this, and anybody that's listening wants to listen. At 8 o'clock tonight on C-SPAN 2, they've got Richard Dreyfuss.
Oh, really?
Apparently he gave a speech a night or two ago, apparently, because last night apparently O'Reilly just went ballistic on it.
Oh, yeah. Was it the typical why does Richard Dreyfuss hate America stuff?
Well, it was Richard Dreyfuss, Alec Baldwin, and of course had to lead back to George Clooney.
Well, of course.
It's just fun I don't enjoy watching him, but I tell you what, every once in a while I go to Crooks and Liars. I'm not going to give Fox any numbers. But no. I enjoy going to Crooks and Liars sometimes and just watching him just absolutely melt down sometimes. When he gets on one of these rants, it's like you just want to have him come out there. It's like, foaming dog. It's like sometimes it's like he just, that is one of the few things he really loses it on, because I tell you what, I think George Clooney got him. I mean, I think George Clooney just put it right between his eyes because he kept on saying people are afraid to come on the factor. And then Clooney had this thing where he kept challenging him, said, you know, meet me on Charlie Rose, meet me on Dan Abrams. You know, he said, and O'Reilly had to put out a statement that said, essentially, he said, my bosses will not allow me to do this.
Yeah, mommy won't let me. Yeah. I'm not allowed to leave the yard.
Of course, I'll challenge everybody to do it, but hey, I won't do it myself.
But right.
He has to be somewhere. He controls the button.
Well, you know, this is, you know, I love it when these people stand up to them. But, you know, this hissy that Ann Coulter was having with Sean Hannity, I watched it all the way through at Crooks and Liars. I don't know if you saw it or not.
No, I thought it was on the Crooks and Liars. I saw it
well, Hannity,
over there.
Hannity had to fall back and let Ann Coulter defend him against that mean, vicious, snarling, you know, claws-extended Arianna Huffington.
And Arianna, though, gets into him sometimes. I enjoyed it because, like I say, I've read the transcript and some of the people talk about it. They said one nice thing was at least she didn't let him keep changing the subject. She kept bringing it back to the port thing. Said every time they turned around, Hannity kept trying to change the subject to get it off onto something else, that she would bring it right back to it.
And, you know, the port thing, I was a little bit sarcastic when I opened the show. This isn't a Republican revolt.
No.
This is a meltdown.
Well, the thing of it is, from everything I've read on it, this is something that was handled at mid-level that apparently nobody in the upper echelon even knew, and apparently people like Rumsfeld, from what we understand, just rubber-stamped it. Because apparently he says he had no idea of it, but apparently he had to sign off on it.
He's a member. There's 13 members or 12 members of this commission. He's one of them, and it was a unanimous vote.
That's what it gets to me. It's sort of like, oh, yeah, I signed it. I don't know what I signed.
You know, God only, I mean, he's the Secretary of Defense. You know, by the time you reach that high up on the food chain, the stuff that you have to sign should be fairly minimal.
Well, it's like, I think you were talking about this the other last night. It was like, here you have Condi Rice and the State Department have said all these things about Dubai and all this.
Mm-hmm.
Now all of a sudden they're having to go back, no, we didn't say anything about that. No.
That was that other Dubai.
Yeah.
You know,
the evil Dubai over there, yeah, over in the corner, yeah.
And, you know, I've done a little studying up on Dubai, trying to understand them and whatnot. You know, it's run by, what, 3 or 4 sheiks?
Well, the thing was, I heard the thing, I know I'd heard this before, but it was nice to be reminded. I was listening to Randy earlier today, and it's like, their workforce is 90% outsiders.
Yes.
I mean, because essentially everybody in the country, it sounds like everybody in the country is a multimillionaire. They just hire all their work done.
Yeah, like 1 in 5, 1 in 10 is a millionaire. And, you know, there's, yeah, that's what they are. I don't know where does the money come from, Luke?
It's like this thing where they were talking about, you know, the fact they wouldn't let us look at the books. You know, we were trying to track down Osama's money.
Mm-hmm.
And all this, it's sort of like, well, these boys apparently have taken the idea of the Grand Caymans a few steps further. And that may be where they're making their money, is just making money off all moving people's illegal money around.
I mean, I found a website where like citizens of Dubai write poems for their leader. You know,
and if you don't, you'll be in jail by the end of the week.
Yeah, well, dear leader, you are as radiant as the setting sun. I mean, this is the kind of stuff you expect out of Kim Jong Il's followers in North Korea, Luke.
Well, you know how it is. It's one of those things. It's like if you don't sit there and kiss the robe, well, we have the man over there with a scimitar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and smile for the picture and tell everybody you love dear leader.
You know,
love dear leader. Well, we have somebody who will replace you.
The funny stuff is in the meltdown, Luke. I found one article today. Like I said, I've been slumming around and going to Newsmax every now and then. And,
well,
yeah,
keep an eye on what the mad dog's doing every once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, just go over and see how bad the froth has gotten on the, and they are, they're absolutely coming unglued. Articles there talking about how, Jeb Bush says, I trust my brother, everything gonna be all right. That was a dandy. And then the best one though, Dubai port deal jinxed. Jimmy Carter endorses same.
Who knows? I mean, it's one of those things. It's like I heard also that the other brother is involved in this too, Brother Neil.
Oh, I'm sure he is. There's never been a dirty financial deal in the Bush family that Neil didn't try to get in and screw up.
I was going to say, I still say he's the one that bugs me the most, the fact that the news media has not followed him like they did every member of the Clinton and Carter family.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he should have his own press corps following him around.
Well, I was thinking more in terms of he should have his own little FBI unit following him around.
Well, what we'd probably do is see if the Star and the National Enquirer want to put together a team. Like, God, just follow him with a camera. You got it made.
You know,
you don't have to make up any pictures.
I don't even like to think about the photographs that would have been taken when he was I didn't order no tie hooker. She just came to my door.
I thought it was like the mint on the pillow, you know.
Hello, my name is Mint. hey, Luke, thanks so much, man.
Take care.
Bye now. They're coming unglued. They really are. That's why I keep saying, you know, if we can just figure out how we're going to deal with this, we can watch them completely discombobulate. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
So if you believe in that God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll, supposedly they say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world, or is that real world? I mean, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? Why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have, you know, all of this injustice in society? And why are African Americans killed at three times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have.
Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
What does Alison Krauss remember about music class when she was a kid?
My fondest memory of music class is kind of just an overall memory, not a specific instance, because music was something completely different than any other class in school. It was, I remember it as all being fun, and the reward wasn't, you know, a great test score, and it wasn't a higher grade. It was getting to be a part of an ensemble and singing something at the end where everybody knew their part. It was all fun and games to me, and you made friends. You know, I found that you made friends that lasted really long time. At least the ones that, for me, that have lasted the longest are ones that I met in school chorus or in music classes, and not who I sat next to in math.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. Music, part of a sound education.
Backwards skate. Everybody skate backwards. Let's see. Coming up on 25 minutes before the hour, this article I mentioned in chatting with Luke, Jeb Bush, Faith in Dubai Ports Deal. See, they're faith-based. And this is why, and then, you know, Wednesday night, prayer meeting night, is a good night to mention the fact that, you know, just remind folks, I despise the word believe. I think believe has probably led to more misery, more heartache, more hell, and more death and destruction on this planet than any other word in the English language or any other language. Because, you know, I can't remember offhand what the word for believe is in German or French or, you know, Upper Lithuanian. But that word will get people killed time after time. I believe, faith. He has faith in the Dubai ports deal. Governor Jeb Bush says he has faith in his brother's administration over its decision to allow an Arab-owned company to operate major U.S. ports, including the one in Miami. Well, you know, I have faith, said Jeb Bush, because I'm up here in Tallahassee, and hopefully the prevailing winds will blow the radiation the other way. You know, he has faith. He also went on to say that he thinks criticism by some congressional members is unwarranted because his brother, George, I wish my brother George were here, remember Liberace, could press for, this is the good part, his brother George could press for more details by the time the sale is supposed to go through on March 2nd. Please. I mean, this is one of those Alan Colmes moments. Oh, please. George Bush couldn't press his own shirt by March 2nd, let alone press for details on the deal that's already going through. What the hell good are details? You know, the deal is approved and it goes through. I'd like to have some details on the port deal. Well, the details are is that we are going to run the ports, and when it is time for us to bring the revolutionaries over, we'll bring the revolutionaries over, okay? There's your details. We have the deed. Shut up. God. He's going to press for details by March the 2nd. You ever get the... there's so much weird, abnormal psych. I mean, the kind of stuff that you write doctoral dissertations on when you think about what goes on in the Bush family. Do you ever think that one of these days, toadying up for his big brother George is just going to make pudgy little Jebby's head just go... And it's just going to spontaneous combustion, just and it's gone. He's just going to explode. It's going to be one of those things where he tears his clothes off and runs around raving like a madman. You know, looking at that hateful old beast, his mother that gave birth to him, and said, "You always loved George better than me. I'm the one that made the good grades. I'm the one that went to school. I'm the one that got to be good. I'm the smart one, and you love him more." Why do I... They're taking my ports away! You're making me let him take my port away! I don't like it, and I'm tired of having to be good to him all the day. He's a moron! I'm the smart one! Love me! It's entirely believable, isn't it? Yes. Yes. Yes, it is. Just going to be sitting there somewhere, you know, somewhere in one of their lovely little vacation houses with a straw and a bottle of old Overholt. And, oh, mother never loved me like she loved George. I don't understand why. I tried. I tried so hard. Well, if he wasn't a Bush, you could almost feel sorry for him. Well, you know, enough of that. Let's go to the phones. Ben is with us from Elgin, Illinois. Hey, Ben, you're head on.
Hey there, Bob.
How you doing?
Well, you know, just a little bit of a historical reminder, though we can't all be Hans and Sophie Scholl. No, we can't. Those two wonderful people were executed 63 years ago today in Munich, Germany. Sophie Scholl was 22 years old. University student. Her brother Hans was executed, both by guillotine.
Yes, they were beheaded.
The Gestapo courts used the guillotine. They were among, I think, the last on the planet to use it. And Hans Scholl's final words were, "Long live freedom."
God bless him. Let us all remember his name. And the documents, you know, the documents are so—they're so profound, Ben. I think I mentioned to you once upon a time that Ben has—if you go to the main page of WhiteRoseSociety.org, Ben has the original documents. There are links to the original documents of the White Rose Society. The scary thing is, you can go through that and cut and paste it into your word processor, Ben, and you can replace the name Hitler with the name Bush. The meaning doesn't change. In fact, it's become more profound over the last couple of years, especially, you know, with the wiretapping and the invasions of privacy and the torture camps and the secret torture gulags and the rendition flights. It doesn't change.
No, we're repeating that piece of history.
Long live freedom. I wonder what that is in German.
I have to look that up. I knew at one time.
How 63 years.
63 years ago.
And he was, you know, he was a bit of an optimist, wasn't it? That would be 1943, right?
It was, yes.
February the 22nd, 1943.
And remember, in 1943, it didn't look like anything would ever bring Hitler down.
That's what was just occurring to me. It looked, Fortress Europa was still Fortress Europa, and there was, you know, the Reich was doing quite nicely in the war. Thank you very much.
Yep, and they hadn't made the mistake of opening the front to the east yet.
Operation Barbarossa, wasn't that?
Yes, that was coming in another 4 months.
And yet. Those young people, you know, and it's not like, you know, it wasn't like Hogan's Heroes with the underground and the coffee pot radio and all of that stuff. They were just individuals. That's what's so amazing out of their story, isn't it?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. And you know, their method of distributing their material is, I think, brilliant. They took town directories from places all around the country, which they had access to at the university. And copied out of those addresses. And then they took postage that they begged, borrowed, stole from various places, put postage on these envelopes, then bicycled all around the countryside to various letterboxes, dropping individual letters into each one randomly. So the people who got the messages were chosen at random. The places they were sent from were chosen at random. The times they were sent were chosen at random. If they hadn't gotten frustrated and decided to actually paper their campus with one of these leaflets one day,
mm-hmm.
they might not have been caught.
But the thing that strikes me the most is their willingness to take that chance, you know, and the fact, you know, you said the postage that they, you know, begged, borrowed, stole. It's always that way for anyone fighting for freedom, isn't it?
If you're fighting for freedom, clearly you're fighting against an oppressive force. It's not made easy for you.
You know, if you look to the American Revolution, talk about beg, borrow, and steal. Wasn't John Hancock a smuggler?
Oh yeah, absolutely. The reason for the Boston Tea Party was that the English tea actually undersold his smuggled tea, and therefore had to be destroyed.
Right. So it's always an uphill struggle.
See, the people don't understand the tax, the tariff wasn't a tariff on the tea per se. It was a tariff that favored only one company.
It was protectionism of the highest order. In
correct. And so the official tea merchant, the favored company, British East India, could undersell everybody always.
And as a consequence, maintain something right at a monopoly.
Just like Walmart.
Ooh, you're triangulating tonight, Ben.
Well, it's hard to read enough history and not do that.
Well, it does happen to you. It's like what I was talking about with this book the other night. I was amazed when I found out that blogging was going on in 1828.
Oh, absolutely.
And again, the bloggers had to go around saying, "You know, can I have a donation?" Because it's always going to be a struggle. Someone just called in to say that Operation Barbarossa was actually June of 1941.
Was it really? Okay.
Yeah.
But thank you for reminding us of that. It's a night. It makes it more of a night worth marking as we talk about, all of this crap. I mean, I'm sorry to just put it that way, but it is. I mean, we are up to our necks in I won't say fascist, authoritarian garbage. You know, what I said earlier about, and I forget whose theory it is, that Republicans are paternal, whereas Democrats are more maternal, you know, where with Republicans, you know, you got to do it my way, or no way at all. And that's what we're up against. We're going to, you know, and that's what George Bush told us yesterday. We're going to sell these ports, whether you like it or not.
Well, you know, I think when we finally take back this country, one of the things we're going to have to seriously consider doing is, two things. Number one, nationalizing many of these companies, including all of the assets of Carlyle and Halliburton.
Speaking of Halliburton, did you catch Chuck Schumer's comment today?
No, missed it.
Sometimes I think that we lack an organization or we lack brains or whatever. Chuck Schumer came out today and said, you know, this Dubai ports deal is so bad that I'd rather see Halliburton get the thing. If Halliburton got the contract to run the ports, I'd pat him on the back and say, nice job. Thanks, Chuck. Take a vacation, buddy. Quit helping so much.
Yeah, friends like that
who needs with friends like that, who needs idiots?
That's right.
You know, and I Jimmy Carter coming out and saying, well, deal looks good to me.
But
God bless him. He's gonna take that sort of international, non-racist stance, because I believe it's a bad idea, but not for the same reason the Republicans do, Ben. Because I think at the core of all this is racism for them.
Oh, absolutely. For them, it's racist. For me, I just want to see American companies owned by Americans, American publicly traded companies,
yeah,
running such things and paying Americans decent union wages.
Yeah, I want to see I want to know that those union longshoremen are out there, because I think those guys would be pretty good protection against unloading a whole bunch of terrorists out of a container from a container ship.
Because, you know, it's really kind of amazing what you can do with a few belaying pins and some wrenches.
They kind of proved it somewhere along the way, didn't they?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Ben, thanks so much for calling.
You take care.
Have a good night.
Bye.
Bye now. And let's see. Mike is with us. Hey, Mike, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how are you doing?
Doing good. Yourself?
Frustrated. Frustrated.
How so?
Well, for a lot of reasons. One, I was the one to slip the note in about Barbarossa.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate that.
We tend to forget, and in our own mythology, especially if you look at our movies, we won the war single-handed.
I'm not one of those people who...
I know. But we tend to forget that, and we tend to forget that at no point did we ever face more than a third of Hitler's army. Two-thirds was on the Eastern Front.
That's true. And how many, I mean, just in terms of soldiery, how many did the Soviets lose?
Just in terms of soldiers, in the vicinity of 10 million.
And you add the civilian population into it?
Approximately 30 million.
Yeah, it increases by twofold.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, no, we won the Second World War. And, no. I can't help but think that kind of gets under the skin of... the British, the Scottish, the Welsh, the French resistance, and it's got to just crawl all over the Russians and the affiliated satellite states of the Soviet Union.
Well, the reason that we bought into that is the same reason why we normalized the Nazis almost immediately after the war, is because we were fighting. As soon as we finished fighting the Nazis, we started the Cold War.
Well, right. I mean, Patton wanted to find a reason to start a hot war with him.
Correct.
And he said he could make an army out of those unreconstructed Nazis and go do it right this time, because, you know, Hitler was a fool.
Yeah. And the problem of it is, we used a lot of those unreconstructed Nazis, not just the Van der Von Brauns.
Oh, no. The CIA, when they were finally declassified, the CIA case files were huge.
Yeah. Galen, the guy who essentially started the CIA, was the head of was one of the heads of the German Secret Service.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, that whole attitude that we've got, Mike, about, you know, here I come to save the day. Oh, I'm singing again. We carried that over from the First World War, too, because the Allied Expeditionary Force that landed in France in the First World War, the common doughboys on the ground, they said that AEF, Allied Expeditionary Force, actually stood for After England Failed.
Right. Well, the thing is, we did help because had it not been for the infusion of new manpower, the French was starting to mutiny, mainly because they'd already taken over a million casualties at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right?
We love to sit there and talk about the cheese-eating surrender monkeys. Well, if you had lost as much of your population as they had, you might understand where they're coming from.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think the reason we got the opposition with regard to the war in Iraq has a lot to do with that, Mike, because everybody wants to forget, you know, that whole cheese-eating surrender monkey business. Everybody wants to forget that there are what? There are French, there are Canadians, there are Germans, all in Afghanistan, and they didn't bat an eyelash on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but going out and starting a new war just because, you know, we were tired of the old war. And what did Rumsfeld say? There's no good stuff to blow up in Afghanistan.
Right. There are no good targets in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And now, since we've run out of good targets in Iraq, we want to do Iran.
Well, you know, it's the same ADD principle that you have in action with George Bush and everything else. He got tired of being a baseball commissioner, so he became governor of Texas. Got tired of being governor, became, by hook and by crook, president of the United States. It's, you know, got tired of Arbusto Energy. That became, Spectrum 7, and that then became the next one. His entire history is a history of losing interest and walking away, and he'd like to do that with Iraq, frankly.
Yeah, well, he lost interest with the National Guard and just walked away.
Yeah.
As soon as they started implementing drug tests, he just sort of walked away.
Yeah, that's the only, you know, the self-abuse is just about the only thing that he's never lost interest in.
Yeah. And the thing of it is, you know, I've heard so many of the conservative idiots try to make it sound like, well, you know, it's no big deal. There were a lot of guys in the National Guard. Excuse me, I'm of that generation. Let me tell you something. You couldn't get into the National Guard unless you knew somebody at that time.
Well,
they were desperate for manpower.
Yeah, well, that unit of the Texas National Guard had members of the Dallas Cowboys in it.
Correct. They weren't going anywhere.
No. You know, that's why you put George Bush in a plane that doesn't even fly in Vietnam.
Right. And he couldn't even deal with that.
No.
He couldn't even deal with soft stateside service.
Well, you know, and did you see the bust that they put up at the Texas Air National Guard, Mike?
No.
Yeah, they enshrined him now. He's got a bronze bust at the headquarters of the Texas Air National Guard. And here's the fun and creepy part, Mike. It says, George W. Bush, President of the United States, 2001-blank space.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I mean, they're not sure that he's going to step down in January 20th, 2009.
Well, probably not. We have already promoted the Enabling Act. I mean, we call it the Patriot Act, but, you know, same thing.
Yeah. Oh, God, it's disgusting. Mike, so, thank you so much for calling in, and thanks for the historical correction there.
No problem.
I hate running around being wrong. Take it easy.
Take care.
Later. And let's see, Bob. Hey, Bob, you're head on.
Hello.
How you doing?
Well, I'm looking out the window here into Peace of North Dakota. And you know how cold it gets up here in February?
That's what I've heard, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The wind comes out of the north, and it can cut you down. And it can get bitter cold in a moment.
Yeah, that kind of stuff where anything that's exposed gets frozen.
Have you ever seen the movie The Rose Garden?
Don't think so.
Okay. Well,
are you having that weather right now, or is it like spring?
No, we don't have snow up here now, but we still got them cold winds out of the north, and they're bitter winds. But I wanna take you back to that 1944 and 45, okay?
Mm-hmm.
At the end of that war, the French had, or in the French provinces of the Nazi realm,
mm-hmm.
they had children held in a orphanage.
Right.
And they were Jewish children.
Right.
And...
Oh, I know what you're talking about now, the Rose Garden. It didn't click for me. I'm sorry.
Okay. Now it clicks. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, how about 2006, February in North Dakota, and three children forced out into North Dakota winds because they didn't have their proper gear, okay?
What?
Yes.
What happened?
My son, William, came mm-hmm. home, and he told me at school, a first grader, a second grader, and a third grader that had forgotten to bring or didn't have their snow pants along were forced out into the wind, and the other children with their snow pants were allowed to play during their break. But these children were forced to stand on the north side of the building with a north wind in the shade as the wind blew on them until the break was over for their recess in February in North Dakota, okay? And I just had it out with my principal, but guess what?
What's that?
He hasn't called me back. He hasn't told me why those children were forced out there, but William did.
Oh, my God.
The playground assistant, I don't know if she's paid or not, she told the teachers, well, we'll put them outside. That'll teach them to bring the proper gear next
time. Oh, no, no, no.
Yes.
Ugh.
Yes.
I mean, this is the same kind of people that said, you know, we'll put their fingers on the hot stove. That'll teach them never to touch fire. We'll lick their finger and stick it in the outlet, and that'll teach them never to put their fingers in an electrical outlet. Oh my God, I hate that kind of thinking.
These are Nazis, Bob. They are Nazis, and they're running our schools. I have told Don Wick, the principal of District 8,
mm-hmm.
in my district, that I send my son to school, that if one of them breaks wind in front of a child, I don't care whose child it is, I mean... Goodness gracious.
Well, you know, it reminds me, Bob, back last fall I had the story out of, I think, Tulsa, Oklahoma, where the child came to school in a pair of black pants and a black shirt on Halloween, and they were told no Halloween costumes. That was declared to be a Halloween costume, and the child had to sit there in class in his underwear all day.
Yep. You see, if we don't stand up and don't be a... combs to my Hannity, okay?
Yeah.
Because you started out with that whimpering little punk, that little Combs. He's not a liberal.
No, he's a doormat.
Yeah. No, he's just a kind of something you can wipe your butt with. He's toilet paper. He is nothing but that. You drop it after you're done and flush it. It is not, and that is not... Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going into a different realm.
We got to roll. But I understand what you're talking about, Bob. And you know, thank you for standing up for those kids.
No,
you know, did the principal get a call from the parents?
No, because the parents are afraid of the teachers. Because the teachers might, oh, I don't know, scold them during the next lecture they have. But guess what? They don't scold me.
No, I think they'd be hard-pressed to pull that with you.
No, I... Oh, Glenda, what? Yeah, the wind chill that day was 15 to 20 below. Okay?
You know, I don't know why those people aren't under arrest.
Well, guess what? I live in a red state with lots of Nazis, and I keep fighting them, Bob.
I know.
I am the White Rose Society of this goddamn...
Easy.
I am the White Rose Society of Williston and Williams County, North Dakota. I burn your... I take your show. I burn it to disc. I take Mike Malloy. I take Randy Rhodes. I take Tom Hartman. I take several others. I burn them to disc, and I give them to Glenda. She takes them to her friends. She gives them out. They send them out. It's just the same thing.
Well, but
oh yeah, and hey, guess what? You're being heard in Canada because some of them are smuggled across the border into that other country. They are being smuggled there, and I
believe you. And I tell you what, I appreciate it so very much, Bob.
No,
I do. But we've got.
We have to do this. We have to. It's like Ben said. Okay, he talked about those young German patriots.
Yeah,
patriots who died, were beheaded, were murdered by a group of nationalists that said they were what? What did they say they were? Socialists?
National socialists?
Yeah, but they weren't socialists. They weren't nationalists. They were Nazis.
They were thugs.
They were George Bush.
Yeah, they were. Look,
and the
half of the SS and half of the SA were made up of the same thing we talked about last night. Street punks, Bob. We're out of here, though. You have yourself a great evening. Take care.
Yeah, I love you, boy.
Bye. Bye now. Love you. Street punks. And, you know, it happens in North Dakota. A child with the without the clothes for being outside. Can you imagine? And in Oklahoma City, a little black child forced to sit through class in his underwear. It's an authoritarian state, inhabited in large part by people who need that authority because they're not strong enough to be free all by themselves. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. I'm Bob.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, we're back for hour number two. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On, and a brief reminder of the phone number. It's 877, the number 4, Head On, 877 for Head On, 877-443-2366. And I said we'd start off with some email, and I only got through one of them. Let's do a couple more. Heard from our friend Adam in the Bronx, New York. Adam writes, I've never been a conspiracy theorist, but the more I look, the more I begin to question what happened on 9/11. I watched Loose Change and still would not allow my mind to believe that the Bush administration, while evil as all hell, would actually have a hand in attacking this country. My thoughts have changed. This latest UAE-American port deal solidified my thoughts. Bush's America is about greed. Bush's America is about striking the best deal for corporations and private business interests. Bush's America is about destruction. Destruction of human rights at Abu Ghraib, destruction of the poor and unfortunate in New Orleans, and finally succumbing to what I've thought all along, the destruction of Washington, D.C. and New York on September 11, 2001. I hate to sound crazy, and I want to doubt. The question I have is, what is coming next? What other surprises do they have in store? All in the name of the war on terror and national security. With the UAE running our ports, what could possibly be next? I love this country and don't want to leave, but I'm scared to death. And he says, thanks for your show and keep up the great work. Thanks for being there. Thanks for being there, Adam. We'll get through the fear of wondering what they're going to do to us next. And, you know, do you remember how every now and then they'll say, well, you know, we've elevated the terror level to sky blue pink today because Internet chatter from Al-Qaeda is on the rise. You ever wonder how they knew the Internet chatter was on the rise? I saw a video clip over the last weekend of Dennis Kucinich, God bless him, interviewing the man who broke the story of the illegal spying to the New York Times, one of their sources. And Dennis Kucinich asked him a question, and he responded, I'm not really here to tell you to talk to you today about, and I don't want to speak privately to Congress about this particular program that's already out in the public. I want to tell the country, I want to tell Congress, I've got to tell Congress about the other stuff that's going on. Now, I'm paraphrasing, but that's the gist of it. I want to tell Congress about the other stuff that's going on. Do you think for a minute when you send Aunt Mabel's walnut fudge recipe to your cousin in Topeka, do you think that can't be read? Because it can. I don't know if you've followed all this right-wing hootenanny about, I can't believe that Google and Yahoo are over in China helping to repress human rights. You've run across some of that filth, I'm sure, right? And you do because you're smart, because you're liberal, because you're progressive, because you're probably a Democrat or a Green or, someone who actually gives a tinker's damn about this country. You scratched your head and went, Google hates freedom and the Chi-Com collaboration. I hate right-wing media. I hate mainstream media because mainstream media is right-wing media. They have had a week-long hissy about the supposed collaboration or knuckling under or capitulation, whatever word you want to use, of the Google and Yahoo. And the fact of the matter is, Google agreeing to block sites on the Internet really can't compare with the enabling we do of that totalitarian regime by allowing, Walmart
to manufacture the goods and the crap that they sell to most of America in slave labor sweatshops. If half of those right-wing nuts who were screaming about that garbage that would encourage their listeners to, never set foot inside Walmart again, we wouldn't have to hear stories about how the Chi-Coms cracked down on Google. You know, I've told you from time to time about the little weirdo, interview invitations that I get in my email. I got one. Google capitulates to the Chinese communists, but won't help American federal authorities stop child rapists or kiddie porn predators on the internet. Okay, it's Wednesday night. It's prayer meeting night, so I'll go ahead and say this: if the feds want to stop kiddie diddling, they'll do a lot better by sort of forgetting about Google and the internet and stuff and start taking a harder look at the Fundy churches. Yeah, you know, Fundy churches like this church. You're going to love this.
Trace, you know what? My engine's revving to go. It's revving up. How about yours? And if it's not, you know what? If your engine is not revving up, you know what you need? You need a Holy Ghost enema.
No, I don't.
Right up your rear end. Because God won't tolerate. He will not tolerate anything else. Say, I've never seen this side of you. Let me tell you something. Whoa. When you allow the Spirit of God and you don't worry.
This is what passes for, stop it, Agnes. This is what passes for religion among the right-wingers. No, I don't do that for general purposes of titillation or anything like that. This is what goes on. They're worried about, the feds want to search all of Google to find two or three pederasts? No, go to the camp meetings, okay? You know, where they talk about enemas. Holy Ghost enemas.
Tell them be glad they didn't see the video.
Yeah, be glad you didn't see the video we captured the audio from. That woman. You know, talk to the hand. Because the face didn't like watching it.
Jesus.
But that's... Wingnuts. They're insane. I mean, you do realize that we're dealing with not very smart, not very sane people. They have, what's the old saying around here? They can swallow a mountain and gag on a gnat. That's what we're dealing with here. You know, the Dubai port deal. They're still standing there with their fingers in the wind trying to figure out whether it's right or wrong. Now, they didn't have any problem figuring out the Google thing in communist China. But they can't, I mean, in their gut, you know, what is it? In your heart, you know he's right, but in your gut, you know they're nuts. That's where they are. Well, them brown people want to run our ports, and I don't like brown people. But Dear Leader says it's all right, and I know we're supposed to trust Dear Leader. You know, and now where's the news story? It comes out that, George Bush didn't know anything about this until a couple of days ago. I guess he only found out about it over the weekend, like General Peter Pace and Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, who had a vote in the thing and voted yes, and it was a unanimous vote on February 13th. And, he only found out about it over the weekend. I guess George was there with him when they found out together over the weekend that they were selling us out to the UAE. You know, that's, it makes my head hurt. It makes my head hurt. Email from our pal Andy in Wales. He says, you know, the French do have some history with leadership that we liberals should take note of, to wit Marshal Foch. His statement, which we should remember for when it all goes wrong, is, and this is true, this is from the First World War, quote, "My center is giving way. My right is in retreat. Situation excellent. I attack." instead of sitting there and letting and you know letting them just body blow you. Oh, please. Oh, please. I saw thanks, Andy. He says, it's perfect for the current situation. Tell the liberals to tell the Democrat congresspersons and senators, attack, 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 always attack. Who was it mentioned to me last night? We have a party that is very good at being an opposition party, and we have a party in this country that's very good at being the leadership party. Unfortunately, their roles are presently reversed, and everything is going to hell as a result. Email from another friend of ours, Bob. I'm glad you're back on the air. Thinking the same thing you are today, as I imagine warm days in my garden, though I'll have to figure out how to stretch a speaker from my computer to the garden this year while I push my optimism aside, not only for the U.S., but for the world, as the madman overwhelmed my thoughts that did not faze me in my latter years before 9/11. I'm concerned, but totally unwilling to give up my hope that good things are yet to come. I feel that I'm being personally attacked by the president every other day. He's going away from the people's wants on every issue. Defiant fool, or does being so arrogant just make you evil? There's no good explanation. And, of course, he mentions the fact that Massey Energy's request to increase emissions was denied. He said, made me smile. But I'm at the point where I say, let God sort them out. I can only hope there will be justice sometime. If it wasn't for the people who fight back, what would it be like? And he says, thank you. No, thank you. Thank you. It's about getting out of the ghetto. It's about refusing to be pigeonholed by the anthrax culters and the Sean Hannity. Ah, your party's insane. No, I'm sane, I'm sober, and arrow straight, and that's probably part of the problem, because if you could just go all Republican and drink the Kool-Aid, or go, you know, take the drugs or whatever it is that, you know, that they do that makes them just march blindly behind you, I guess we'd all be happier. You know, it's Clockwork Orange. It's Alex after the treatment with the little, you know, toothpicks holding his eye open and stuff. Dr. Ludovico or whatever. Too many weird cultural references, maybe. Yeah, but you're supposed to be happy after you do that. You know, just shut up, go to work, stop at the Walmart, get your dinner, come home, watch Millionaire Idol, Island, Survivor, and go to bed and get up and do it again. Amen. And I can't, and you can't, and we can't, because, well, I mean, you know, false humility is a sin too, isn't it? And there's no sense in being false in this. For the most part, we're a lot smarter. You're a lot smarter. You process. You think. That's what I was saying earlier about a discussion among us. I know that we do have, because I, you know, like I said, I get the emails and so forth. We have lurkers. We have people who sort of, you know, listen around the fringes of the program and type with one hand and that kind of thing. But, you know, they don't want to be in on the dialogue. And, you know, the purpose of this program is to provide an alternative or an opportunity to process on things. And if, you know, if you want to do the whole network thing and scream, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore, you can do that too. Because sometimes you get to that point. You know, this is Wednesday night. This is prayer meeting night. So I got a story for you that might, it might lift you up a little bit if you are of the religious persuasion. This is datelined Porto Alegre, Brazil. A coalition of American churches sharply denounced the U.S.-led war in Iraq on Saturday, accusing Washington of raining down terror and apologizing to other nations for the violence, degradation, and poverty our nation has sown. You know, it makes me absolutely crazy when I hear these right-wing nuts talking about how, you know, them Democrats, they love the terrorists. No, we don't. We hate terrorism. But the thing is, we're advanced and complex enough that we hate terrorism of all stripes. I happen to be driving downtown. If you could see where I drive, you'd understand why I laugh when I say downtown. But I was driving downtown. Had to run a quick errand, get a cup of decaf before the show. And I happened to be listening to this wingnut out of Charleston, Mike Ag something or another. And he was talking, this whole diatribe about, I have no more sympathy for Islam. Why the mainstream Muslims, why aren't they apologizing for all the mayhem caused by these cartoon demonstrations? I will not stand by any longer and apologize and tolerate the slaughter of innocents. I will not any longer tolerate the slaughter of innocents. Okay? And right then and there, sort of had to jam on the brakes and pull the vehicle back from the brink and not hit the telephone pole and quit screaming and spraying the inside of the windshield with my effluvium as I began screaming and carrying on. He can't tolerate the slaughter of the innocents any longer. I wanted to pick up a phone and call that show so bad and say, Mike, buddy, glad to know you can no longer tolerate the slaughter of the innocents. Okay. Because thanks to you and people like you and Bush voters like you, we tolerated. We didn't just tolerate, we encouraged the slaughter of the innocents. Hundreds and thousands at a time. The Johns Hopkins study says over 100,000 dead as a result of the United States invasion of Iraq. Not 100,000 soldiers. No. 100,000 innocents slaughtered. And of course, if you bring that up with a wing nut, the next thing you get is, well, you know, that study has been discredited. No, it hasn't. And even if it has, how about 50,000 innocents? Is that okay? Okay, not 50,000. How about 25? Not 25? How about 12,000? Not 12, how about 6? Not 6, how about 3? Not 3, how about 1,500? How about one innocent person slaughtered? At what point do you tell me that slaughtering innocents is okay? Is it 1? Is it 10? Is it 100? Is it 1,000? Where do you... And, you know, some right-wing nut in Charleston. I can no longer tolerate the slaughter of the innocents. Oh, bite me! Let me check here. John is on with us. Hey, John, you're head on.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Well, you know, I figured I'd Skype in because... I know everybody's pretty ported out at the moment, but over here in Australia, there was a press conference with the government's liaison to transportation and airline, rah-rah-rah.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found this really peculiar. In the same speech, Singapore Airlines was applying for the ability to get into some of the international routes from Australia.
Okay.
And in the same speech, the guy says no to that application, but then invites Singapore Airlines to invest into Qantas, the national airline.
Oh, I'm very well familiar with Qantas.
Okay, so they're not allowing Singapore to have some route space, but they'll allow Singapore to the Australian airline out of the country.
Well, that's just beautiful. Just out of curiosity, does Dubai Ports World or any other foreign entity happen to be running the harbor at Sydney?
Not that I know of. I am going to look into that though. I always want to find those connections. But the reason why this strikes me so peculiar is, you know, you talk kind of slightly in the American bubble about how the American treasury is being raped and gutted by these, you know, corporatist thieves.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what happens in the next step once they've is all this globalizing so that they can mobilize all that money so that they then the world government? Because I'm seeing that same thing here.
Oh, you know, John, I don't think there's any doubt whatsoever that globalism is a disease that doesn't merely affect the United States. I mean, the globalist free traders, you know, Tony Blair's one, Mr. Howard is one there in Oz, and they're making the whole world sick out of it. You know, if it's, you know, whether it's, you know what I think of when I hear Qantas? I think of the movie Rain Man, where they're in the Cincinnati airport and Raymond won't get on the airplane because all airlines have crashed, and Tom Cruise, you know, Raymond, you know, every airline has had a crash, and he's, Qantas never crashed.
Yeah, and that actually technically got broken about 2 years ago, so they had to lose that claim to fame.
But you know, I think about that airline has had a marvelous reputation the world over,
and it's slightly changing because they're trying to move a bunch of their maintenance overseas. The ownership has changed, and we used to have another Australian airline here that shut down called Ansett. And Ansett ran into real money troubles, and it really seemed as though, you know, Qantas wouldn't renew their passage to the gates because they had overrunning control of the actual airport at that time, and basically ran them into the ground, let a whole bunch of people lose their jobs so that they could get a complete monopoly when, you know, they were even getting applications to help save their competitor because of just the fact that it was going to be so many Australian jobs and there was so much infrastructure. And so they said it wasn't possible, waited for it to run down, and then they go and rehire a whole bunch of people after laying off their own people to hire back a bunch of Ansett people, you know.
And now the globalist free traders have decided that it's time to, put Qantas to the death of a thousand cuts?
Well, I think it's purely Qantas is the one that plays ball. So they will always spot here in the privately owned airport.
But where is it? Where is it they want to farm out their mechanics and their machinists?
I think they're trying to do it in mid-route stuff in South America and in some parts of Asia, but that one's being fought really, really hard. I don't know if they'll be able to get that one through. Even the right-wingers in government have said, you know. But they're also looking to look like good guys in any ways that they can because of the whole Australian wheat board thing. And can you believe our deputy prime minister is about to go into the green and possibly the red zone to try and fix the trade agreements between Iraq and Australia on wheat after all of this backdoor nonsense?
You know, I don't think he's going to be fixing anything. And you know, I really appreciate the perspective that you give me. You sent me a couple of links a week or so ago about the crazy lady or the crazy dude who said that birth control was going to cause Australia to become a Muslim nation.
If you could have seen the news footage, because she was in amongst kind of other female leaders from all the other parties, and you could all see them kind of physically recoil. And even one of the liberals turned and says, "Well, she's kind of on her own there," and continued to make her own statement on the issue. And what was so sad, it was following up after that all these women were together because they had stood up to fight a really, really strange religious battle over the morning after pill here. And the women got together from all sides of government and made a stand, took the decision away from the health minister and put it into the Therapeutic Drugs Administration where it should be. And this guy was a devout Catholic. I talked about it on our show a little bit. And they won. And they got approval for it. It went through House and Senate. And it was really nice to see all sides come through and say, you know what, this is a women's issue and the women are going to speak. And you know what, everyone's going to follow lockstep because it's not your choice.
Yeah, right. And it's not your uterus.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I've got a stake in that fight when I grow one. Until then, you know, I'm out of it. But
even the health minister got really upset 6 months later. One of the Greens has been wearing this T-shirt that says, "Tony Abbott, keep your hands off my ovaries."
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, as this pressure is being brought upon him that he's going to lose this ridiculous decision-making control that he had, he suddenly, 6 months later, publishes a thing saying that this is unfair, an attack on his Catholicness, which was just absolutely insane.
Well, John, let me ask you this: is this a function of, I mean, do you think this is carryover? I mean, this is this some sort of contagion coming from the U.S. toward you guys, or is that?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. The Howard government is just step with the whole corporatist regime, along with Bush and Blair. Now, it probably was a little harder to pull the wool over the Australian eyes, but they've done a very, very clever job, and you've had all this money now being diverted into Hillsong Church, which is the big mega church that has the broadcasting station and the recording studio and the mobile recording studio. And you're seeing that encroachment coming in, and I know that people have gone over from this side to go and study under a Robes people.
Oh, God. The stuff that you're seeing in its sort of infancy, toddler stage in Australia right now, unless we can stop it here, it's only going to get worse for you there. You know, I remember back during the Cold War how, you know, hardcore Republicans, they're exporting communism. Never mind the Muslims, we're exporting English-speaking fundamentalism.
We always refer to it as opposite world, you know, this kind of thing, how you it's almost speaking out of both sides of your mouth at once. And, you know, I think when you get so caught up in trying to put across an ideology as some sort of truth, you lose all perspective. I think you lose all perspective. I mean, my favorite question whenever things would come up with some of my family when they call me and my kind communists, I'd ask them to define what a communist is. And the response is always everything bad. And I said, you know, when you can get past that, you can have a discussion.
Yeah, because you're that's a little too broad a brush. I mean, you can't get in there and really try to seek out what it is that they're upset about when what they're upset about is everything.
And my follow up question always is, well, then tell me the difference between communism and Marxism. And they go, it's the same thing. And it's like I said, go get a clue.
Yeah. Well,
I'm waiting for them to say that it's a communist thing going down in Central America now, because I reckon that is the biggest threat to the whole facade of what is going on. Is
well, they're already
down there
they're,
taking control.
Well, where Hugo Chavez is concerned, Kind of Sleazy Rice came out a week or so ago and said that the United States was going to inoculate. That was the word she used, inoculate South America against the spreading menace of Hugo Chavez.
What spreading menace? I mean, how is a menace spreading when he's been elected in clearly?
Well, and I want to know where they're going to start their inoculating, because they've lost, the Bush administration has lost almost the entirety of South America. I mean, there's maybe one right-wing regime left. And
well, Mike, I have a question for you because I'm not there. You know how the even American population in Florida has always been strong Republican backers and whatnot.
Yeah, because they've done a lovely job of pandering to the anti-Castro people.
Well, yeah, I know that they've done that, but with kind of what's happening in Central America and whatnot, is there any signs of that starting to loosen? Because I would think that there would be a point where that stronghold could very easily be broken.
Well, the fact of the matter is, Hugo Chavez did a great thing over the course of the winter with the discounted heating oil into the Northeast.
Yeah.
And that's got to buy him some good PR points. But moreover, you know, it's not so much what he did, but what the other oil companies didn't. Hugo Chavez was able to say, look, I'm going to sell heating oil at a discount. It's not going to break us. It hasn't broken them. They're still selling gasoline for 10 cents a gallon in Caracas. And Exxon and Royal Dutch Shell and BP. Oh, no, hell no. We can't cut our prices. Our shareholders would have our heads.
Well, do you have the grocery discount docket thing happening there yet, where you're having local establishments being taken over by grocery store labeled gas stations?
Not some of that, but not so much around here.
It's almost epidemic in Australia now.
I'm just curious, what does a liter of gas go for down there, John?
Oh God, what are we going about these days? Jeez, since I don't have a car, thankfully, it's somewhere I think $1.20, buck up to $1.40 a liter.
Is that U.S. and dollars or Aussie dollars?
Aussie dollars. So you'd be looking probably about. You'd probably be looking at $5 a gallon, American.
Wow. But, you know, you just said something, and I hope the listeners caught it. You said, I don't have a car. You said, I don't have a car, and your statement that was not followed, John, that was not followed with, and dear God, I'm going out on the ledge and jumping tomorrow because I don't have a car. You live in a place where people don't have to drive an automobile.
Well, here's the thing, actually, to be where I am, this city has gone on that don't put anything into infrastructure, and any infrastructure you build, make it a commercial project, a private project. The city mass transit in Sydney is absolutely in shambles. It's an absolute shambles. We had one power cable fall in the middle of Sydney last week, and it brought everything, the roads, the trains,
everything,
for 6 hours, and it was absolutely insane. And they're talking about, like, Sydney itself, especially, is oversaturated. And I have so many friends that grew up here that want to get out, and that's telling you something. That
where do they want to go, John?
Somewhere, because the.
I mean, are you saying out of Sydney or out of Australia?
Just out of Sydney. Ever since the plague of the Olympics and the overdevelopment, it's all just gone insane over here, and it's just not maintainable, and it's gotten dirtier, it's gotten more violent, and people are working in the middle of Sydney, which used to be a real communal city. No one knows their neighbors anymore. They just did a major piece in the Sydney Morning Herald last week talking about how in the inner of Sydney, some of the most commonly artistic suburbs are now the most depressed and where people feel like they have absolutely no community. But would you imagine that Perth is known as having the only state economy that's on a roll out of any of the states in this country, and they're like way off in the west, almost too far to get to.
Yeah, well, I mean, isn't
they're having a good time.
I mean, isn't that the West Coast?
Yeah.
Wow.
I've been there, and I think that's where we're going.
That's you're really just messing with my little I want to travel the world gene right now, John.
Well, I'll tell you, like it's still a great. There's still so many things to see, but it's just like, you know, everyone came to Sydney.
But again, you talk about, you know, we've got to privatize it. This is another instance of American so-called globalism infecting another perfectly nice corner of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, we don't even have a truly Australian-owned grocery chain in this country anymore.
Who owns that?
Well, one is owned by the South Africans, and they're probably the best because I think their stores are individually owned, and it's actually more like a franchise thing. You have Coles, which I think is now all English or something, and Woolworths is part Australian, part English. And Woolworth's side chain just got nailed for price fixing, so they changed all their Safeway stores to Woolworth names.
Safeway? You've got Safeway.
Yes.
That's it.
You'd be amazed what's over here and what represents and what doesn't, and what I found out came from here and what doesn't. But anyway, I'm going to let you go take some other callers.
Yeah,
I wanted to let you know about the ports. Like, I just, when I heard this guy almost in the same breath, say, we won't allow Singapore flight space, but we will take their money to invest in taking one of the greatest Australian companies to be a partially overseas owned, is great. I just don't get that.
Well, you know, and there are national security issues here as well. And
absolutely.
Maybe it was Singapore Airlines that I heard about just the other day, just signed a huge contract with Boeing to... I think they ordered 10 jumbo jets and optioned 10 more.
Oh yeah, I tell you, if you're going to fly, you know, internationally, you know, from Australia or anything, you know, kind of when people look at flying from here. You know, if you can't get a Qantas, Singapore Airlines is probably your second choice just for, like, quality of service, dependability, everything. And right up next to that would probably be, was it New Zealand, which I've flown, and they're wonderful.
Well, it's sooner. I think these guys at some point, John, are looking for, you know, they want one, you know, they want one big world this, one big world that, one big world airline. Nobody's safe. Nobody's safe.
That's why we're getting off the grid, man. I don't want to be connected to any of them.
I don't blame you. John, take care, and thanks for calling.
All right, man. Good night. Love right. Agnes.
And give our best to the to your mates and, you know.
Love the Gale.
Tell them, yeah, we'll be down there someday.
No worries. We'll talk. We'll be.
All right. Later.
Live time.
All right. Bye.
Later.
Now. Through the magic of the internet, a phone call that sounds like it's coming not from across the world, but from across the room. Our buddy John Fox, half of the duo with Bruce Birch of Fourth Estate Radio, Saturday nights at 10, fourthestateradio.com. Let's take a break. It's we're overdue for our Cup of Joe report. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Jumped on the shelter to get away. The boys are cocking up their guns. Tell us, General, is it party time? If it is, can we all come? Don't think that we don't know. Don't think that we're not trying.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Just when you think things couldn't get any crazier in this country, now we have this deal where a company controlled by a country that finances terrorism will be put in charge. It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Just when you think things couldn't get any crazier in this country, now we have this deal where a company controlled by a country that finances terrorism will be put in charge of security at our ports. As usual, it turns out that some of the people involved behind the scenes are pretty close to the White House. For the record, if you wanted to smuggle a nuclear or biochemical device into this country, the ports are probably the best way to do it. Feel any safer? I sure don't. I read that even some of the president's supporters in the GOP are a little nervous about how this is going to play to the working-class cult members in the red states. But if I were them, I wouldn't worry too much. I think Bush can go on national television and have sex with a mule and the cultists would nod approvingly. After all, the man primarily responsible for 9/11 is still free. Iraq is becoming a great training ground for terrorists. And worst of all, their taxes haven't gone down at all, but they still think Bush is doing a heck of a job. Of course, once the Diebold machines are in place all over the country, it won't matter what they think anyway. And I'm sure the so-called professional media will soon call this story dead, just as it's called all the other stories dead. Halliburton, Plame, Abu Ghraib, WMDs in Iraq, what happened on 9/11, the 2000 elections, and so on. No doubt they'll find a way to blame it all on President Clinton or find some other story to distract us with. Maybe some white woman will disappear or something. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Like I say, the world's got no fear.
welcome back. A little less than a quarter before the hour. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And a quick reminder of the phone number and a little update. We're trying to grow this thing as best we can. And we're, you know, for the little bitty organization that we are, my wife, Shiva, the seven-handed goddess who produces the program, and little old me, and the heroic efforts of Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. All of those things come together to make this program happen. But you know, sometimes bigger organizations can get caught up in the traditional way of doing things. Well, you know, that's how it's always been done. That's how it is. That's how we do it. The phone call you just heard from John Fox, our buddy in Sydney, was done over Skype, S-K-Y-P-E. And, you know, it really galls me to promote these guys without being paid to do it because, well, you know, we need to get paid. But this is a wonderful technology, and I wanted to just take a minute and mention this to you because it's an alternative for you, especially if you're across one of the ponds and want to get in touch with the program at some at what I hope is not for you an insane hour or, you know, what, I think this, let's see, 8... Yeah, it's like 10 o'clock in the morning for John, I think, tomorrow. But if you want to get in touch with the program and you don't want to spend a lot of money doing it, if you'll download Skype, S-K-Y-P-E, Skype.com, onto your computer and purchase yourself some Skype credits, I think you can talk on Skype for something like 3 hours at about a buck U.S., per hour. So you might, it's a great way to get in touch with the program. If you're in some sort of a situation where you can't use our toll-free number, you can Skype in. And when you Skype into the number you want to use is area code 304. And if you're across the pond, you'll have to use all that country code stuff that I have no idea how to do. The country code, and then our area code here is 304-658-3333. If you want to do that and you want to get, and, you know, it's great for calling relatives on their regular line or whatever. If you want to get Skype credits, if you'll go to fourthestateradio.com, fourthestateradio.com, there's a link there to go and purchase Skype credits. And they're really, really cheap, and they go a long, long way. So I want it, and eventually, you know, the next step is going to be bringing on Skype calls computer to computer. It takes a little bit of cord pulling and plugging and stuff like that to do it right now, but we will very soon be in a position to do that. So you can go to fourthestateradio.com. You can buy Skype credits through the link there, and you know, if you want to share your opinion. If you're an American expatriate, or if you're just someone who follows America, American politics, American news, American current events, cultural stuff, and you've got it, and you want to share that perspective with an American audience, by all means, feel free to do so, because we welcome the opportunity to have that conversation. I'm constantly thinking about what will make the show better. Yeah, I know, Wingnuts. I know. Get off the air, Bob. No. But things that will make this show considerably better, and one of them, you know, I've talked from time to time, and this one just sort of banged around in my brain earlier today. I've talked from time to time about how I envision, I think I mentioned it earlier this evening, if you're doing liberal radio, America doesn't need a good talking to. We need a discussion. We need to get back to an America where you talk to your neighbors, because what John said was transpiring now in Sydney, where some of the most close-knit communities have become distanced and nobody knows anybody anymore. That's, you know, the Australians are shocked by that right now because it's new to them. Guess what? That happened in America, what, 10, 20, 30 years ago? You can move into some mixed subdivision And you can buy a house for $250,000 that has three bedrooms and it's built on a concrete slab. And it's, you know, you can throw a rock from one window and do substantial damage to the house next door because it's not 3 feet away from you. You can do all that and never know who your next door neighbor is because we have become an isolated people. And it's in that isolation, the isolation of, sitting in the car, driving to work, listening to right-wing hate radio, and you hear, you have to be this way. Obviously they're wrong. That's why they're not on the radio. My friends, they have no ideas to call their own. No one is interested in hearing liberals talk because they don't have any ideas. Well, the fact of the matter is, whatever ideas the right wing had, they've put out there, and every last blessed one of them has been a miserable, abject failure. But I'm getting a bit afield. The whole point and purpose of this is to tell you about something that I envision, I hope, down the road. We have the capacity here because, for all the fairly small, in terms of person power operation that we have, we've got some really cool high-tech stuff. And the fact of the matter is, if you're into doing this, and we'll set up an evening for it, or two or three, depending on how it works out. I can put several phone calls at one time on the air here, and as long as you'll all behave and only one person speak at a time, we can begin that front porch conversation. Imagine a front porch on a pleasant spring evening with the sun sinking slowly in the west and the sounds of the birds that have returned chirping in the trees. Ice tinkling in a glass of tea, perhaps. Or something else. And a bunch of people just talking together and having a darn fine time in the process. We're going to try that down the road. And I think it's going to be really, really fun. So when that time comes, email or whatever, remind me once in a while that I promised I would do this, and I will. And we'll have a run at it. Another program note for you. A week from tonight, we're going to have a guest on the program. That guest is going to be Jeff Biggers. Now, you may have heard me a couple of nights ago talking about this book, of which I've become quite enamored, The United States of Appalachia. Jeff Biggers will be on the program next Wednesday night, roughly 15 minutes after the program, or 15 minutes after what for us is 7 o'clock on the West Coast. It would be quarter after 4. And we'll talk about this magnificent book that he's written. And he'll take any questions that you might have or might wish to ask him. If you'd like to purchase and read the book in advance, there is a link to the book itself at Ben Birch's WhiteRoseSociety.org. It's at the bottom of my page, WhiteRoseSociety.org/Kincaid, KINCAID.html. If you go to the very bottom there, you'll see a picture of the book itself. Click on it, and it will take you to an order page where it'll be to you in a matter of a couple of days. And I do these kinds of things because, honest to God, I think you and me, working stiffs, so-called ordinary Americans, I don't think there's anything, when it comes to working people, I don't believe there's any such thing as an ordinary American. The working people who carry this country on their back while the children of leisure, the Bushes of the world, relax upon it. There's nothing ordinary about not ordinary Americans, extraordinary Americans. I think extraordinary Americans need to be heard. I hope you feel the same way. I sincerely do. So coming up a week from tonight, Jeff Biggers, author of The United States of Appalachia, which I think we'll talk about maybe a little bit more in the next couple of days or so. He will be on the show, and I hope you'll have some good questions for him. So, you know, does that clear stuff up? You know, sometimes we got to do these program note kind of things. Now, I mentioned how all of the right wing, you know, because they're the idea party. Yeah. how the right wing, you know, they said they had all these ideas and they were going to save America and they were going to make America better and everybody's going to be June Cleaver and Ward Cleaver and little Beaver Cleaver was going to be, you know, all our children were going to be, you know, above average, just like it says in Prairie Home Companion, Garrison Keillor, where all the children are above average. Well, they told us that, but it didn't quite turn out like they planned. And an interesting article that I ran across. I'm at Agnes's microphone. She had to take a break. So I got to slide over here for a minute and grab the article. Stand by, please. Yeah, there it is. This is from the Scotsman. It was emailed to me. Headline, Neocon Architect Says Pull It Down. Take heart from this. Reading directly from the article, neoconservatism has failed the United States and needs to be replaced by a more realistic foreign policy agenda, according to one of its prime architects. Francis Fukuyama, who wrote the best-selling book The End of History and was a member of the neoconservative project, now says that both as a political symbol and a body of thought, it has evolved into something I can, this is a quote, quote, evolved into something I can no longer support. He says it should be discarded onto history's pile of discredited ideologies. In an extract from his forthcoming book, America at the Crossroads, Mr. Fukuyama declares that the doctrine is now in shambles and that its failure has demonstrated the danger of good intentions carried to extremes. That's a mouthful, isn't it? Certainly is. Even the people who crafted this hateful garbage are running away from it now. But it's all, you know, it's the same MO. It's, you know, it's, well, you know, we need a better foreign policy. Yeah, that's it. We need a better foreign policy. Neoconservatism. Well, you know, we didn't quite get it right. But you know what? I doubt if Mr. Fukuyama is going to say, well, you know, we didn't get it right. Mind you, we didn't get it right, but that doesn't mean we won't get it right next time. And that's the trick, isn't it? These guys are now saying, well, you know, we screwed. But you know what? The next time through, you know, it's like Heinz. You know, the first 56 didn't work so good, but Heinz 57 is wonderful. No. They're not going to get it right the next time either. You don't just throw their idea on the scrap heap of history. You throw them on the scrap heap of history. And you look at people like Mr. Fukuyama going down the street and you go, ha! There's that idiot that said we needed to invade Iraq. Hey, honey, get the kids. It's a crazy person. And you never let them have any kind of credit for any kind of anything approaching the rational thought for the rest of their natural-born lives. Or at least, you know, that's the way I see it. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, you know, hour number three. If you've got something cooking, let us all in on it, would you? I'm Bob Kincaid. You know what this is. This is Head On.
tell his wife all the other ducks. He cut a chicken's head off, and it will keep on running. He twitches when everything seems planned out. Everything seems nicely planned out. With human race comes make your face. How come all my body parts so nicely fit together? All my organs doing their jobs, no help from me. No. A person pulls a spider's leg out.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All righty then. 6 minutes past the hour. Share a quick email with you. A new friend, Andrew in Poughkeepsie. You know, I love the way the karma works out on all of this. You know, here and there. And I'm always picking on Poughkeepsie, and I apologize. But Andrew in Poughkeepsie, Bob and Agnes, I love what you do, and I recently began listening to your show regularly. I wish your type of commentary was the mainstream media. I work with a Christo-fundamentalist shrub supporter, and recently she asked the question, where do you get your news? We've all got a pretty good idea where she probably gets hers. Right, Andrew? I said I get the majority of my news from progressive liberal talk radio periodicals and news online. She said, they're all communist writers and talk show hosts, and I shook my head. I showed her articles on Halliburton supplying our troops in Iraq with contaminated water and the soldier who had to pay $700 for body armor that was not documented properly when it was destroyed as a biohazard because he was struck by an IED while on patrol in Iraq. Now I feel she does not seem so supportive of the shrub, and she can see the downward spiral of this nation. She used to always say to me, you seem so angry. Before, when I tried to tell her the truth, she would dismiss me as a socialist or a communist. I asked her, you know, you're so upset with the communist, then you should be upset with Bush, because he's selling our nation lock, stock, and barrel to the communist Chinese. Thanks for what y'all do, and keep fighting the patriotic fight. Sincerely, Andrew. Thank you, Andrew. I admire your willingness to try to reach out to these kind of people. When I said, you know where she gets her news, well, you know, all the Christo fundies, they watch Fox. And occasionally they'll get a little pulpit news from the likes of D. James Kennedy there on the Trinity Broadcasting Network. It's amazing. But when you know, some of these people, you can peel it, you know, you can see the scales fall off their eyes from time to time. And it's a pretty amazing thing to watch happen. And it's in its own way, it's downright inspiring. And if you will bother to talk to, I mean, if you'll work up the sort of heroism that Andrew has going for him and try to carry on a conversation, you know, they'll go to the screen before you ever have to. They'll start screaming before you ever have to. All you have to do is be loaded with facts.
And I hesitate to use the word word truth. I mean, it is the truth. These are facts. It is truthful to tell people what the Bush administration has done to this country. But truth is, to these people, a fluid thing. Truth is something that happens on the O'Reilly Show. You got to understand it is no simpler a task to deprogram a Fox viewer than it is to deprogram a Mooney. How about that? Mooney's Fox, Washington Times, Rupert Murdoch, Reverend. Never mind, I was being redundant. You are, you know, when you take, that's what you're doing. You're deprogramming a Mooney. Let's go to the phones. Peter is with us from Tallahassee, Florida. Hey, Peter, you're head on.
Hey, Bob. Hey, Agnes. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great.
Well, it's a great show. Bob, I would only dare do this on a prayer meeting night.
Okay.
And I'm going to talk about the Antichrist, if that's all right. So hang on to your headphones.
Testify, Brother Peter.
Yeah. This, you know, some people will take this maybe as from a spiritual point of view and others from a historical point of view. But either way you look at it, it's interesting information. The reason I'm bringing this up is so often lately in the chat rooms and also on the various radio programs, the word evil is being bannered around so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I've even seen discussions about, well, who's the Antichrist? Is it Bush? No, it's Cheney. No, it's Rumsfeld. And I thought I would give a little context on that. In the Bible, the concept of the Antichrist is raised in only one place in all of Scripture where the Antichrist is mentioned, and it's mentioned in four verses in John in Little John, where the small.
Now, see, I was ready to jump right to Revelations, Peter.
Well, that's the purpose. That's the purpose. I wanted to get this out. Now, the letters of John. These were the letters of John. They're written in a situation in the early church where there was a huge controversy revolving around how to follow Jesus in the end times. And it's interesting to note that even then, the Christians thought they were living in the end times, even
right.
2,000 years ago. And John talks about this and talks about the implications of the controversy. And what he's trying to do is to promote a view of Christian discipleship that's based on care for the neighbor who's in need of food and shelter. And he's struggling against a faction in the church that thinks that they're living in the end times and they should only think of their own salvation and their own needs. Sounds a little familiar.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're kind of there, aren't we?
Yeah, we're kind of there.
Yeah, and I don't want to take you off your topic, Peter, but every generation that takes that kind of belief viewpoint, every generation, we're the ones, it's going to end before we're gone.
Ain't it the truth? Ain't it the truth? And if for John in those times, following Jesus meant helping with the material needs of others. So it was in that context, this huge end times dispute, that John raised the concept of the Antichrist. And again, I say it's the only place in all of Scripture where it's mentioned. And I'm going to talk about these four verses, and I promise I won't preach them. I'm going to sum them up. 1 John 2:18 reads, "Dear children, as you have heard, the Antichrist is coming. Even now, many Antichrists have come." Notice that Antichrist is plural.
Yeah.
Many Antichrists have come, and within the context of these passages, we see that they've emerged from within the church. Does this bring a few names to mind? Robertson, Falwell, Dobson?
Exactly.
In 1 John 2:22, he says, "Who is the liar? It is the man who denies Christ. Such a man is the Antichrist. He denies the Father and the Son." So here we have to ask ourselves, what is it to deny Christ? Well, today the most popular and prevalent way to deny Christ is to lie day after day after day. If you take Christ at his word, where he says, "I am the truth and the light," then to lie would be to deny him, is at least my point of view.
I'm following it. That makes sense to me.
And then there's only two more verses to go where this is covered. In John 4:3, he reads, "But every spirit that does not acknowledge Jesus is the spirit of the Antichrist and is even now in the world." And here we see the plural again, every spirit. And also we see that the Antichrist is a spirit or a spirituality or, if you will, a belief set.
Exactly. And it's so interesting, is it there is an elision going on here, isn't there, Peter? Because it's clear, and it reminds me of the business in Genesis where it talks about the sons of God married the the daughters of men. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But nobody remembers that there were sons of God in Genesis, and so we get into real trouble later. But however, you know, you're talking about what's going on there in John, and the word Antichrist is actually used. But everybody wants to elide that into what's going on in the 13th chapter of Revelations, where where he is referred to not as the once in Revelations is
absolutely,
there.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Bob.
No, it's
absolutely.
The beast. It's the beast.
It's absolutely, Bob. And the last reference to the Antichrist is John in verse 7, and it reads, "Many deceivers who do not acknowledge Jesus Christ have gone out into the world, and any such person is the deceiver and the Antichrist." Notice the words, many deceivers.
Right, and Antichrist means nothing more than someone who will do things that are in direct contravention and diametrically opposed to the teachings of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter.
Absolutely, and Bob, the point of all this is that these contemporary end times preachers have willfully distorted the words of the Bible, and they've utterly fabricated and invented the character of some sort of mystical figure or Antichrist that appears at the end of time to conquer the world. It simply isn't in the Bible.
No, it's boogeyman theology, Peter.
It is boogeyman, and what is in the Bible is just the concept of the Antichrist filling many deceivers who are already among us. So if you ask yourself the question, why do these end times preachers preach it that way? Well, you know, the light goes on. If they were to preach that the Antichrist emerged from the church, there are many Antichrists among us, what do you think that would do to their power? People would start to suspect that people, it would open eyes is what it would do.
Well, exactly. And, you know, there are so many cases in point. This is just a wonderful thing that you've brought up, Peter, because you want to talk about the Antichrist. Here's the Antichrist. When Cindy Sheehan and Jim Wallace, you know, the minister, and a number of other real Christian preachers were arrested during the House's debate on the hateful Republican budget. You know, the one that more guns, less butter, that budget. They were arrested for standing outside on the sidewalk in front of the Capitol, and some enterprising journalist rung up Focus on the Family.
Perfect that you brought that up, because that's one of the warnings that John gives us about the spirit of the Antichrist. It has, by implication, it's a refusal to love others through the sharing of worldly goods, the budget.
Yeah, and the thing is, this enterprising journalist asked the official spokesperson for Focus on the Family, and I remember covering the story on the show. They said, "Why weren't you out there protesting this hateful little budget?" And their response was, "Well, you see, we believe that there is a greater mission to be accomplished in protecting marriage."
There is no greater mission than loving each other. Christ said it.
Well, didn't he? Yeah, what did he say? This is the first in all the commandments?
Absolutely.
Or something along those lines? You know,
absolutely.
Like, never mind the business with your neighbor and your neighbor's donkey and so forth. You did love thy neighbors? I mean, that was him, right?
Absolutely. I just wanted to give everyone the complete biblical authority to call all the bastards the Antichrist, because they are. You don't have to pick one, praise Jesus.
Yeah. You can have one from column A, two from column B.
That's right, and they promote each other. All you've got to do is let the people die in New Orleans and get promoted. I'm so sick of it, Bob. I'm so sick of it.
And the thing is, you know you're not supposed to, but I hate them.
I do, too. And in fact, we should react with righteous indignation against them.
You know, I mean, I got a story in the stack here, and it was kind of an inspiring story. Now, you know, we understand that there are bad people in the world, right, Peter?
Absolutely.
One of those bad people in the world was a dude named Michael Morales. Morales is 46 years old, and he was due to be crucified by the state of California. Because we do understand that lethal injection is crucifixion, because, you know, they...
Yes. I'm following.
Well, he was supposed to be lethally injected. But it turns out that if you're going, it's a new program of killing people in California, this crucifixion by lethal injection.
And this fellow, his lawyer filed a lawsuit, you know, one of those frivolous lawsuits, because they discovered that in California's lethal injection program, there was going to be no physician. That this was just going to be some jerkwad with a needle.
With a high school education.
Yeah, no nurse, no doctor, no nothing. And
yeah.
The court who heard the case said, "Huh, no. There is a prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment. And if you're going to let some jackleg do this, there's every possibility in the world that you might be torturing this dude to death."
Well, this is true. There's a skill set involved. You do need to know what you're doing.
And here is the nice part. No doctor, no nurse was willing to do the job.
Ah, justice.
Because, you know, of course, that whole Hippocratic Oath thing says, first, do no harm.
They'll find one of those pharmacists to do it that won't give up.
Great minds think alike, Peter. It's the first thing that came to me. You know, this is the kind of refuseniks we need in America, not some freak that says, "Now, if I give you that morning after pill, you might have a silent abortion."
That's right, you might.
Because
I know you had sex. I know you did.
I wish you'd taken a movie because I'm real kinky and I want to watch.
That's how these dirty
little fundies are.
I want to see if you enjoyed it so I can pray for you.
Peter, thanks so much for your testimony here on prayer meeting night.
Hallelujah. Love you guys.
Hallelujah. Praise Jesus.
Good night.
Bye now. And, this is the Florida segment of the program. Rick in Panama City, Florida. Hey, Rick, you're head on.
Hey, Bob. I always love sitting here listening to Peter, my compadre up there in Tallahassee. How you doing, Pete? Yeah, because I love the where he comes from. He's always got a great perspective on things. So I appreciated the call very much.
Well, thank you. I'm sure he appreciates it.
Well, you're doing an excellent job as ever. Of course, I got in late, so I don't know how many things you've addressed. But, the thing I wanted to mention was, since you were talking about religion, is that I put together a whole bunch of these crazy clips, and then granted, they're not the greatest in the world, but I fool around with a little video editing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to send you a link to one I call, I can't say it on the air. You'll see what it says. But I'd like to send you a link to it. And if you can sit through the 5.5 minutes, I'd appreciate it.
I will sit through it because you haven't sent me. First day with the rented lips and too much gin on the cornflakes this morning. You haven't sent me anything yet, Rick, that hasn't been absolutely engaging.
Well, these things, I have a whole bunch of them. I'm trying to put together an HTML page that would just have all these old clips from my old Bunker Babies site and the Last Babylon site. A lot of them were political ads for 2004. And unfortunately, they weren't very effective. But, I'll put them together and maybe we can share them on the chat room. And,
sure.
But I want you to see this one about the religion because it's a montage, but I tricked it out a little bit. It's a little artsy-fartsy, but I thought you might enjoy it.
No, I will. I'm sure I will.
But at any rate, let's see, I had to make a little list here. About the Vito pen.
Yes, yes.
He's about to break out the brand new shiny Vito pen.
Now, that would be the Vito crayon.
Yeah, that one that's kept in that little red thing that says, in case of emergency, like Republicans get wise, break glass.
Yeah.
This guy has never used it, and he is swearing by all that's holy that he will veto any legislation that comes forward on this debacle. Can you imagine that?
It still does kind of boggle the mind, you know?
I mean, of all the things, like we were talking about this a couple nights ago, but of all the things that have got these Republicans torqued off, it's this one thing, and now he's going to literally take their nose and rub it in it.
And the thing is, it was mentioned earlier in the program, Rick, that this is, you know, the media has declared this to be a Republican revolt against the president.
Yeah, imagine that. Hey, fine, let them have it. Let them have it. I mean,
no, I want to let them have it, Rick, believe me.
Just like your other call was saying, though, is, you know, I'm waiting for the Democrats to drop the ball on this. I mean, this lobbed over. It's got a map. They've got GPS on it. It's labeled. It's stickered. It's even can be signed for.
Yeah, this is the old. Yeah, this is the old thing where some sports writer said asked Ted Williams,
They said, you know, a lot of batters say the ball looks like a pea when it's coming at them. What's it look like to you? And Ted Williams said grapefruit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Now, this is a grapefruit. This is underhanded. I mean, this is just hanging up in the sky. And, you know, I'm scared to death. I mean, you know, I'm a member of the party, and I'm scared to death that what we're going to find out is that, you know, swing and a miss.
Oh, yeah. You watch a lot of movies?
Oh, a bunch of them, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to say a line because it best describes the Democrats in my point of view. And believe me, I still am one, but I registered independent as a protest.
Okay? I understand.
But the thing, like, here's the line. The only sucker who could miss with this gun is the sucker with the bread to buy it.
Oh, wow. What is that? What's that from? I've heard it. I know. What's the movie?
Sure you have. And it was Peter. The character Peter in The Dawn of the Dead, the original.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Shot up in Pittsburgh, sure.
Yep. And it is so true about the Democratic leadership. I mean, it's an amazing feat that every time they can literally just have this pot of gold in their hands and then go, oops, just lose.
Well, you know, we saw that with and so much of this, you can trace it. It's got, like, you know, the little radioactive isotopes things that you can trace with the hospital equipment.
Sure.
And it goes beep, 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 straight back to DLC headquarters.
Yeah, they don't want to win. They like the status quo.
Well, they're making a damn fortune being losers.
Oh, sure they are.
I mean, Mary Beth Cahill?
Let me tell you what that group of people is, that particular part of the Democratic Party is.
Okay.
Those are the snobs. Those are the sob riding, driving, key coffee clatch type snobs. You know, I mean, the ones that were always finding ways to lock you up or feminize a male. Those are the ones that all the rest of us really hate.
Yeah, well, those are the ones that they're talking about, you know, that the right wingers are talking about when they're talking, you know, limousine liberals.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there are limousine liberals. They are very, very real, Rick. And that, you know, and it's the Mary Beth Cahill's. I got a name right here for you in case you ever hear it. Just, you know, if you run it, if you see this guy on the street, cross to the other side. Joe Hansen.
I've heard the name, but I can't recall what he is.
This guy, he is he's like a direct mailer. He's a so-called political strategist, huh?
Oh, I thought you were saying he was a spam king.
No. This guy is he's a political advisor, and you know, time after time after time after time, these high profile Democrats hire this guy, and you know what his claim to fame is?
Can't imagine.
He loses bigger and better than any other Democratic strategist.
Well, that's their guy then, and he's certainly earning his pay.
I mean, he handled, in the last election cycle, he handled like six Senate candidates that were supposed to be, you know, lead pipe cinches. You know, we can't lose this race, this is ours to lose, blah,
right.
blah, blah, blah. Out of six, he won one, and that was Ken Salazar in Colorado.
And that was just because they hated that other dude.
Yeah, that was because Pete Coors was running on the other side.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, even they were afraid of him because he really does like that putting people in oven stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's like running against Darth Vader, and that race was close.
Yep. It is amazing. And how about old Mr. Snow, Jon Snow, that vampire? How about his connection to this whole Dubai thing?
Oh, doesn't this? Yeah. He just, and by the way, the $1.6 billion or whatever it was that CSX sold its port facilities to Dubai Ports World for, that was inflated.
Well, this,
that was an inflated value.
You're talking about a guy who is so greedy that he wants to take apart Amtrak, fire all the unions, and get everybody back at $7 an hour.
Yeah, and you know, if he gets his way, what? Maybe blacks and Chinese lay in the rails?
You never know. I'm serious. He wants to privatize the whole Eastern Seaboard. I mean, the whole Montreal Express, everything. And there is something that actually works. I've been on it. I know Amtrak like the back of my hand. I used to work for him.
It's a nice ride.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's beautiful. I always wanted to take the Silver Bullet. I never got a chance to do it. I think it's the Silver Bullet or whatever it's called. That one goes all the way out to Chicago. I never got a chance to do that one.
Well, the one that runs through here, and it's a beautiful ride, not too awfully far from here, you can get on and ride to the Greenbrier Resort. And it's just an hour or two. And you want to, I mean, the train ride of your life.
Yeah, it's so great because you get to see all the countryside, and there's, you know, you just you basically keep moving most of the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, used to have, I mean, I haven't been on one in a few years now. But
I think that, yeah, I think what I'm describing here it was what was part of the old George Washington line of the C&O Railroad.
Okay.
See, when, because, I mean, there's a little bit of that in my blood, too, because when.
Conventionals or turbos?
No, this, I mean, this was way back.
Oh, this was the old steamers?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the first half of the 20th century, that kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
You know, the nice stuff, the Pullman cars,
right.
All of that, and the C&O Railroad ran that. And where we live, you know, Collis P. Huntington was the guy who, you know, founder of Huntington, West Virginia, and Huntington Beach, California, and Huntington Banks all over Ohio and whatnot. They told him that you absolutely could not put a railroad through the New River Gorge of West Virginia.
Oh, I think I saw something about
that. And he said, really? Well, I guess I'll have to do that then. Yeah. And
I saw something on the History Channel about how they built a bridge or something or how they did it.
Well, my,
did they tunnel right straight through a mountain? What?
Yeah, they tunneled through several.
Yeah.
My great-grandfather was a section foreman. Who laid that track?
Wow! Well, so you're a big shot after all. A real, true blue blood of great stuff.
Yeah, once upon a time.
Yeah, man. Hey, I wanted to also bring up Skype. Okay, now I haven't, admittedly, so I haven't been back there in 8 months, a year, whatever it was. But I really took a look. Everybody wants to take a look at their privacy policy and their terms of agreement because that stuff is full of spyware and trackingware and adware.
Yeah.
And it's going to load you up, baby.
Well, the one thing that impressed me, I looked at both Skype and Gizmo.
There's not really a dime's bit of difference between them as far as I remember.
But the thing that impressed me most about Skype was the fact that as far as, you know, they load up a bunch of crap. But, you know, if you've got the right kind of protective software, you can deal with it.
Well, yeah, you can. And I recommend to everybody, if you're going to run that, get Zone Alarm. Just go to zonelabs.com, and they got a free version that will do very well. They also have a pro version, which is very good. I recommend it to anybody. It's the best firewall on the planet, and it does what it does is it controls applications that all of them are nowadays keylogger programs that will log what's going where you move your mouse, your whatever everything you type, and it phones home with all this information. And all these programs constantly phone home. And are just sending all this data about you. So what, Zone Alarm will take care of that for you.
But on the good side of Skype, the one thing that kind of impressed me about them was the fact that they use end-to-end encrypting technology that just about the NSA can't get through. And they have no back door in their programming, or so they claim.
Okay, because if I remember correctly, they're made by the same people that had Kazaa.
That's right.
Yeah. And they're on some weird island that's Alto or something, Ato or what.
Yeah.
They're just like, they have a really great thing going where so far nobody can extradite them or do anything to them as long as they don't leave the rock, you know?
Yeah, just have it all shipped in. But, I mean, and apparently it's very upsetting to the United States government that Skype will not give them a back door and Skype will not give them a key for their encoding.
Yeah, well, that I'll tell you how just rare that is because people just don't understand what's going on. Well, I don't mean to sound condescending. I'm saying a lot of people don't because they don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going on is what they are harvesting and who's cooperating, like your ISP and all of these websites that strip your header information and just back trace you just by your IP address that everybody that's got a website can see. They know everything you're doing all the time, and that you know.
So do they turn this around for marketing purposes, Rick? I mean, help me here.
It's for sale to the highest bidder to anybody that wants it, including the federal government. As a matter of fact, there was a show on C-SPAN just recently about cell phone records, and they have that hack with that lady from the FCC, and then they were asking, well, how could this be? Because anybody can buy your cell phone records.
Right.
And it's easy to get it because there's a lot of graft in the industry, bribery, and all kinds of things. And how did this happen? She goes, oh, it's just got biased. You know, well, they are very good at letting anything to do with your privacy
get by them.
Fall through the cracks.
Yeah, well, yeah, but well, it got Rick. It got by them because they were working on the big stuff. You know, Janet Jackson's breast.
Yeah, I mean that is such. I remember when I started in radio, I had it was during the Fairness Doctrine and all that, or whatever you want to call it, and you couldn't put superfluous information out on the air, or you would be fired. Okay, you better knew what you were talking about, or you'd lose your third class radio telephone license.
Oh, I remember those.
You had to have your tickets taped to the transformer.
That's right.
And boy, if you came out and started doing any of this stuff that they do now, you'd be off the air. You'd be gone, and the radio station might even lose its license. They would pursue it right to the very end. Nowadays, the only part of the FCC that's worth a darn or strong, and I hate them for it, but they're very good at shutting down, you know, pirate radio and stuff like that.
Right, because, you know, if you've got a little transmitter on your kitchen table, you're a threat to the Republic.
Oh, sure. I mean, and this is, even though these are supposedly the people's airways, which is nothing more than a cliche like your First Amendment, and then your Second Amendment and all the other amendments are all cliches.
Right.
I mean, if you really tried to, if they want to take anything from you, they can. But this whole thing about the being the people's airways is such a joke, because these people buy these up. They get renewed no matter what happens, unless you get a freaky thing like a boob falling out.
Yeah.
And those crazy old bats. What are those people? Those
The L. Brent Bozell crowd and the American Family Association.
Yeah, all them. The feminazis. Can we call them feminazis? That group of women, the American Family, whatever they are.
Concerned Women for America.
Yes.
That's your real feminazis.
Yeah. Now that's one place where Rush has made a nice term, because it applies to most Republican women. Feminazis, you know that.
Yeah.
And that group is like the definitive definition of it. But that it's just back in the days, if we had that very same thing that required equal time, that it required non-erroneous, superfluous information, that people had to be licensed, and for God's sakes, go to school, go to a broadcasting school. Most people, they're not naturally, you know, able to do radio in the first place. But at least go to school so you understand how it works and learn some diction and voice inflection and some things like that. Now, I can tell by the way you sound, you're old school. And I've heard you get on your DJ voice where, you know, you're just about ready to do some some speed park and stuff like that. Get hot, get racing right now, you know, that kind of stuff. And so you know what I'm talking about. You had to know what you were doing.
Well, I loved it. I hope I'm not. I hope this doesn't make anybody else's eyes roll back in their heads, because I love to talk about this stuff, because it goes to an employment issue too, Rick. When I started learning, I was 15 years old, and I loved theater, and I loved speech, and I loved writing. And so, you know, I got a job making $3.15 an hour, I think, disc jockeying at the Gospel Voice.
All right.
From 7 p.m. to midnight.
Pretty low.
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah, and you know, my first groupie was 75 years old.
No kidding.
But 3:15, 3:35 to do that, beat the hell out of 3:35 to flip the burger. It was the same money.
I remember my first job was I had WKJ, and you had to say WKAJ. You had to get that W right. You know?
I got hit with a cattle prod if I said W.
Yeah, it's W. News. It was the news.
Yeah,
you know?
News.
But my first job was over there at KJ in Saratoga Springs, New York, and I was working overnight, and I used to have this creepy dude that would call me up, and he'd always say, "I want to listen to Donna Fargo." And I'd be like, "Oh yeah," and I'm in the States myself.
I think that dude managed to live in every city with a radio station in the United States. I mean, you know, everybody that ever did this had that guy.
Yeah, and I used to listen to all that. Like, I'd be listening to the Skip, you know, because I really didn't have to do anything but babysit one of these automated things. That's when that first started, and it was the worst of things. It was beautiful music.
Oh, God.
You're listening to Simply Beautiful, WKAJ, you know? and WASM, and it was absolutely horrible.
And every now and then you go and you change the Drake Chenault reels.
Yep. Sure enough, and put the carts in the carousel.
Yeah, because now when I started, we had two old QRK turntables. That, you know, I used to say they were QRKs that came over on the ARK.
Right.
An old ancient Gates board, you know, with the rotary pots, no slides.
Sure.
And the three position toggles and all of that stuff. And it was a great learning experience. You know, and I did, you know, I said never say W, it's W, and it is news, it is not news. And this was a little gospel station but I jocked for an hour. It was such a low rent operation. We had no network news, so I was the network news at the top of the hour. And, you know, I'd go and rip the fool's cap off of the old iron lung UPI machine.
Right.
And learn to do all that. Then, you know, moved up to another station in the locality that had the Drake Chenault automation on the country FM. And then I jocked on the rock and roll AM overnight.
That's exactly right. I worked the overnights for the beautiful music. Then I did a morning drive on WKAJ, and that's where I got my actual airtime with an old Gates yard.
Yeah.
And it was a really old, like, we're talking 1950s station on the AM side. So well, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but the whole upshot of this is, you know, there I was 15 years old, Rick, and I got a job. I got a job doing this, and they taught me to do it. I mean, it's no different than, you know, Benjamin Franklin getting the job as the printer's devil when he was, what, 12, 13, 14?
Oh, sure. And how about that very bizarre man that always came in that you had to show the ultimate respect for, the class one engineer?
Oh, my God. He was like the dude in Dune who folds space.
Yep. I mean, you just had, hello.
And this guy, and he engineered like eight stations in the entire market.
Right.
And he had an ownership interest. In order to have him as an engineer, you had to give him a percentage ownership interest in the station.
Well, I don't know if our fellow Lester had it, boy, but boy, whatever Lester said, you jumped and or said how high.
And I mean, you know, this guy, I mean, his hands were permanently stained yellow from the filterless Chesterfields that he smoked. And you know, the gray hair and he was always going from one transmitter site to the next, and it was just, I don't know if the guy ever got to go home. And you know, he talked like this. Any problems there right there, Bob? I don't like the smell that's coming out of the back of that transmitter. You might want to keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
And,
right.
You know, it was like talking to Bear Bryant.
Sure. I remember, boy, this fella, he
But you know what? All those experiences that you and I had, Rick,
yeah,
they're not there. I know, I mean, there are lots of kids in this community right here that are fascinated. You know, they know what I'm doing here, and they're like, you know, Bob, can I come and watch? Can I come and learn?
Well, yeah, I mean, even getting a job as a board op doesn't pay enough for a guy to live on.
Well, no, you can't, A, you can't live on it, and B, you can't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, the group where I was on the air in Beckley, the AM News Talk had a bigger staff than any other radio station in the building because the rest of them were jukeboxes.
Yeah, it is so unfortunate. But you take all these creeps on the right, they couldn't engineer a show if their life depended on it. I'll say Rush might be able to. But you take the Hannitys and all these Johnny Come Latelys. If they had to engineer their own show and get their carts queued up right, and you know, remember to hit, to be speaking as you hit them so you don't hear that bump, they couldn't do anything. They wouldn't be able to get. It would be the most loose, terrible thing. They all have producers because they're no talent slobs.
But you know, I'd like to see that day come back. I mean, that's Howard Stern didn't get up one morning and decide to be outrageous.
That's right.
You know, Howard Stern started in radio, his college station?
Sure. You know, and I mean, even Imus, you know, he knows what it's like to have to poke a card in.
And, you listen to Randy Rhodes. She obviously has her chops.
Sure, she does.
You know, she was Portsmouth, Ohio, just across the river from West Virginia, the Texas, Florida. You know, I heard her talking one morning about, or one afternoon, about having to do the Sunday morning shift in Portsmouth, Ohio.
Oh, yeah, she did a lot of stuff. She was down in, I think, Amarillo, Texas, too.
And I did that Sunday morning shift. That's where the preacher who's paying for the time comes in. and right. spits and sprays all over the room. People wonder, you know, where does he get this business of, you know, losing his mind and screaming on the air and stuff? Man, I watched that for 3 years every Sunday morning. You know, the old what is it, SM57, 58 with the big styrofoam windscreen over it, and standing there in the next room in the soundproof booth just screaming his head off.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the owner used to come in. If there was a record I was playing at KAJ, this guy was a nut, you know, an insomniac, but he was the owner. And he'd come in and just take the record, rip the needle across. He's great big, I think there were United Audio turntables, big pliers with a belt underneath them. And he just ripped that sucker and then snap it in half while I'm on the air, while it's playing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Right. Yeah, because by then the vinyl was, you had to physically do it. You couldn't just go against the countertop like they used to.
Well, yeah, they were like clay or something.
All of this is such a valuable learning experience for anybody who wants to do this business.
It sure is, and maybe someday. I mean, I got a lot of hope for low power AM and FM 10 watters. I think I haven't been back to the Talkers magazine in a while, but I mean it looked like we were going to get some relief and be able to run one, and if that happens, I'll go on the air.
Oh, I think you would have an absolute blast.
Oh yeah, I mean I'm dying to do it. Like I used to be a member when I don't know if you ever heard of these, but there used to be Lycos Talk Radio.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And Alternacast, and I was a member of a show. I did my own show called The Night Flyer there, overnight, and then I would before that I'd be on a show called The Fallout Shelter, and we were number one forever.
Oh, but, you know, and I look forward to my kids getting a little bit older. You know, God knows it's probably a sin for me to send them down this road. But, you know, I look forward to them getting old enough. You know, first thing they'll do, we'll bring them in here, and they'll cover some of Agnes's turf by doing the phone answering.
Well, sure. I mean, I got one kid, not the youngest, because the twins are the youngest, but the other boy. Here's a guy that can. Ever since we were a little kid, we'd run two turntables. He knows how to cue up music, and then we had this contest. We're keeping the music in a certain mood and genres and all that. And we're back and forth each other all the time now, even on our computers. And when he's not out to sea, and it's a blast. And he is so good. He is so good. And you know, but he makes a terrific living off the oil industry on a boat, a supply boat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, he couldn't possibly, do this professionally.
Right, right.
But, I mean, here's a kid that could, I believe he could easily score movies or anything. I'm bragging a little bit, but he's that good, and he grew up around it.
Well, you know, I hope the low-power thing works out, too, because I'd like to see a day, among other things, this whole conversation centers around what is going to make liberal talk work.
Absolutely. I mean, what's wrong with the world today is there's no hometown radio stations.
There's a classic case in point. There was a couple of years back, a railroad train with some sort of noxious gas chemical thing.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
In the upper Midwest, and the emergency action network or whatever you call that now.
EBS.
What used to be the EBS, yeah.
That's right.
They called all the radio stations trying to, shelter in place, go inside, close the windows, that kind of thing. They couldn't get anybody to pick up the phone because Clear Channel owned all the stations and everything was beamed in on satellite.
Sure. I mean, it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible.
I mean, there are stations here in West Virginia where you can still tune in at 10 o'clock in the morning and hear the Trading Post.
No kidding.
You know, I got me an old refrigerator, and I'll swap it for a bass boat, even if it's got a hole in the bottom.
I used to love those. I used to get a chance to do them on Saturday morning.
And they are a blast. If you like talking to people, and if you like listening to other people talk, and you like radio that's about that's got a neighborly feel to it. That's why I keep talking about this idea of creating a front porch with this thing.
Sure.
I think we could have an absolute hoot with that. And
I think you should pursue it because I know it sounds crazy, but something's got to break. People just can't get this far away from their roots and not at some point in time say, look, I need to get out of this circle.
And frankly, I don't think ultimately the right wing paradigm of how talk radio works, it may not succeed for liberals. And it's not because liberals have no ideas to convey. We God knows for every one they've got, we've got a thousand. But the thing is, you can't convey that kind of thing under the paradigm as it was established by Rush on Mount Belzoni or whatever.
Well, yeah, there's so many examples on where the Democrats seem to fail in realizing the power of the medium. They just don't get it, and they won't fund anybody. I mean, look at Guy James. Here is an excellent broadcaster.
Oh, I love Guy to death, and bless his heart. He's coming back soon, right?
I hope so.
No, don't hope. I'm telling you, he's coming back soon. I've even been emailing with Guy a little bit, letting him know what kind of studio setup we got going here so that he can get it going there.
I'm so glad to hear that. The point I was going to make is that when you have all these people, like the people at Gore knows, the people like George Soros and all these others, and Dreyfus even, all these people that got tons of money don't get it, that they need to fund radio, because radio's where it's at. It's not TV.
Well, there, you know why, Rick? There is a snobbery involved with all of this, and it is a profound snobbery. I mean, there is some stuff that the right accuses us of which we are profoundly guilty. And one of those bigotries, one of those snobberies, 25 years of Rush Limbaugh. Can you imagine that? Or 20 years of Rush Limbaugh, and we just sat there and took it. Rick, everybody said, well, you know, that's AM radio. It ain't nobody but... I'm sorry. Wrong voice. No one listens to AM radio anymore.
Yeah. Well, these guys, they think that the whole world can be, you know, that their approach to it, they can relate to the whole world through having a little cocktail party and getting together with Professor So-and-so, and the Rhino. And, you know, and just have these little integrated private little bullcrap sessions that have absolutely nothing to do with the real world of the common man, like me, the prole. They need to just get sat down with by somebody.
Right, and again,
here's how the real world works.
And again, we don't need a good talking to, we need a good conversation. And you don't take somebody who happens to be a really funny comedian or a really good actor and immediately assume that they're going to be great behind a microphone.
Oh, yeah, I am so perplexed why they thought it was a good idea, Air America, to put Al Franken up against Limbaugh when we know darn well that Rhodes is the person to take that fatso on.
Well, I tend to concur, but you got to understand, if I understand correctly, Rick, the Al Franken was the raison d'être.
Yeah.
Of the entirety of Air America, which tells me that maybe they were off on the wrong foot to begin with.
Well, look at him now.
I mean, not to say that he's bad. He's not.
I don't listen to him because, quite frankly, he's not. You know, I like him as a comedian. Okay, I like him a lot as a comedian. But in this situation here, I don't think he's cut out for it. I don't think he does a good job, and he certainly doesn't have the chops, as you said, as Randy Rhodes does, and they are wasting their time. And now they just went to a subscription thing for their archives, for Pete's sakes, and I'm trying to understand that why they don't understand that people just getting to know them aren't going to shell out a dollar, $10, or $20, or 25 cents.
It's a paradigm issue, Rick. Truly is, and it's an attempt to make left wing radio work on a right wing basis.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And look at how they're wasting Sam Cedar.
Yeah, they are.
Talk about the rising star on that network. You know, I mean,
Sam is the biggest problem for me is I don't get to listen to Sam that much unless, you know, I happen to not be on the air that night.
I used to listen every day on the archive. That's what I would do. I'd go up to Air America place and I would listen. But now I'd have to spend $2 a day or something, or $10 a month, or 20. I don't even remember what it was. But they put out some email about it, and I was like, "Are you kidding me? You won't give this guy's got no affiliates. He's one of the best people you got." And they just recently, you know, chumped Mike Malloy and took him off in New York City for some stupid actress yak show.
Oh my God! I tuned that thing in once, and you know, I defer to Agnes on things feminine. And I said, "Honey, come listen."
This is.
And
this
she
is
just
where,
walked out of the room and said, "What are they thinking?"
I mean, this is where O'Reilly started. So maybe they're thinking, well.
Maybe we'll get an O'Reilly out of it.
Well, but that, and again, we come full circle to the whole point of what I think you and I are talking about. You know, the 15-year-old kid that needs a job actually jocking on the overnight or getting to cut weathers or whatever, that kid can't get a job anymore in radio. Because it all comes down on a bird from the from this conglomerate or that conglomerate, and you know, so and you know what, the right needs to be worried too.
Well,
because that kid might wind up being the great right wing talker of 20 years from now, or the great left wing talker from, but it ain't going to happen because they're not incubating it.
Well, no, they're incubating, but they grow these people in a secret laboratory in Brazil. They got some boys from Brazil that work on.
Oh, is this the whole thing with the pod person under the bed, and you wake up the next morning? And, my friends,
these people here are just—I don't know where there can be so many weirdos that think exactly the same. They would sell their soul for a stupid mortgage of, you know, and a decent looking car, and just give away every ounce of integrity to spout this foolish babble that they do spout.
Well, and that's the thing that it comes back to. You know, we talk about, you know, we Ben needs support, I need support. We all need liberal radio needs support. And the thing is, it doesn't. You know, $10 million will do one thing, but $10,000 or $100,000 100 times over will do so much more.
Yeah, and all they got to do is buy one big flamethrower of 50,000 watt, right? And just create this network, this 24/7 live network of all the talkers like yourself and Rhodes and everybody.
Well, you know, we don't have the money for the flamethrower, but you know what? That may not be the future, Rick. I mean, we have created, sort of against the odds, we've created the Head On Radio Network.
Well,
you know, we've got three shows now. We're hoping to have four, maybe five. Hopefully, down the road, add a couple of more daily shows.
I'll listen all the time.
And move it from. You know, move it from just the internet, maybe to satellite, or, you know, down the road. Look at wireless technology in the computers, Rick.
Oh, sure. I just bought it. I mean, wireless has gotten so good. You wouldn't believe the RF that's inside my den. You wouldn't believe it. I mean, I run on a KVM. I'm running several computers. And I just bought over at Radio Shack for $40 the wireless intercoms. So me and my kid, we like to talk, and he's on his computer.
Yeah,
and they've
well,
done
that,
so
the,
much
the day is, you know, the day
is flawless.
Yeah, but the day is going to come, and that's what I'm getting at. You know, there are inventors out there that need to be cultivated. Our side, you know, I've said it before. Our side is so far behind the curve on some things that we think we're on straight road. And in this particular instance is one of them. I'm sure cooking in some little compu lab somewhere is an idea for something similar to Sirius or XM that goes in your car, especially if you live in a fairly developed urban area that's got a wireless receiver in it that for wireless internet, wireless audio in your car.
Oh, sure. I mean, it can be done. I mean, there's no limit to what we could do if somebody would just foot the bill. And then they're going to make money on the back end. I'm so sick of Democrats always looking at the short dollar. I can tell by the clock on the wall you need to say goodnight. Somebody.
Yeah, I do, though. Rick, thanks for the conversation.
Hey,
I hope I didn't hold you on too long.
No, I enjoyed it, but I'm worried about the listeners. I mean, this is inside baseball. We might have put them all asleep.
Well, I hope not, because I hope there's somebody listening out there that knows somebody that can get hold of one of these rich people. Ted Turner, for God's sakes, but we'll leave it at that.
Remember the wheel and feeling.
Exactly.
All right.
Take care, Rick.
See ya.
Bye now.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody, for listening, for calling, for emailing, for making this what is without beyond a shadow of a doubt the best job I have ever had in my entire life. God, it's wonderful. And it was produced tonight by my lovely wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor. Engineered by Randy Kerbway. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the stream and the archives of this and many other fine liberal programs. He's got a fundraiser going on. He never sends you a bill. Do the right thing. And the show is brought to you. Now, you want to talk about somebody that's putting their money where their mouth is and trying to change attitudes and trying to change thoughts. and trying to make a difference. The show is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream, and they build it out of bricks and mortar and wood and nails and ideas. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.